Northern Lights by Philip Pullman, dramatized by Lavinia Murray.
I am Balthamos, a listener of lives, a recording angel. I, Balthamos, have come to this Oxford, one of innumerable Oxfords scattered throughout the world, and to this Jordan College, one of countless numbers within parallel universes, because of one unique 10-year-old girl, Lyra Velacqua. Her world differs from all others in a very strange way. The human soul is an animal called a demon. A demon can think and speak, and during childhood it changes shape, beast to bird to fish to insect. It illustrates every mood. One glance will tell you a person's character. No one can pretend to be something they're not.
Come on, Pan.
Lyra and her demon, Pantalaimon, Pan for short, who's currently in the form of a brown Hebrew character moth, move through Jordan College's darkening hall. They keep to one side, out of sight of the kitchen, and follow the length of the three great tables laid with silver and glass. Lyra reaches the central dais, looks back at the open kitchen door, and steps up beside the high table. This is set with gold cutlery and crystal goblets. She flicks the largest goblet with her fingernail.
Shh! This is serious, Lyra. You know we shouldn't be here. If we're caught, please, Lyra. Let's go now. Come on, please, please.
I ain't going yet.
The steward will be here any minute.
Doesn't come in till the first bell. Look in the retiring room, Pan. See if anyone's there.
No, I won't.
Yes, you will. Roger dared me. So go on, flutter off.
Pantalaimon flies the short distance to the retiring room, looks round warily, and returns to Lyra's wrist.
Anyone?
No.
Good. The first girl ever to set foot in here, Pan. They don't even let maidservants clean it.
Congratulations. Can we go now?
I haven't finished. They do themselves well, don't they? Look at this smoke leaf and poppy seed. That chair looks really comfy. It's like sitting on a big fat cloud. What do you think they talk about in here?
Not about you, that's for sure. Quick, Lyra, hide!
Lyra crouches behind the huge winged armchair as the master of Jordan College and his butler enter. The master's demon is a raven called Leonore. The butler's, in common with all servants, is a dog, which he's called Fidolia.
Has Lord Asriel arrived yet, Wren?
No, Master.
When he does, show him straight into hall.
Very good, Master.
And you've decanted some of the special 1898 Tokai.
Yes, Master. His Lordship is very partial to that.
Now leave me, please.
The Master reaches into the deep oak wardrobe, taking a moment to choose a robe. He shakes it free of the hanger, scattering dust and two spiders, and pulls it on. His raven Leonore settles on his shoulder.
We have business to attend to, Leonore. Pity we have to use the rare tokai as bait.
Lord Asriel drinks with moderation, but the cold may encourage him to drink more.
The master of Jordan College unstoppers the decanter, removes a piece of folded paper from his pocket, opens one edge and pours a thin stream of white powder into the wine. He stirs it with a pencil, a 2B, his favorite for marking student papers. The air suddenly smells of marzipan. The master goes to suck the drips from the pencil, but his demon stops him with a shriek.
Don't!
Well, quite. I don't want to accidentally do away with myself. Thank you, Leonore.
If Lord Asriel were to live, the consequences would be catastrophic.
Yes, yes. Unthinkable.
See that, Pan?
I could hardly miss it. Now let's get out.
Steward's bell. I thought we had more time.
Just wait till he finds us in here.
I don't care if we get caught, but I don't understand. Why did the master put that stuff in?
We're in big trouble.
Get into the wardrobe, Pan. Oh, we could prevent referring to murder.
Oh, yes. Are you going to jump out and snatch the glass?
Well, I'll do something.
Shh.
The butler. I can see him helping himself to leaf from the smoking milk.
Get off. You're standing on me.
Oh, sorry.
What, Azrael?
Wren's gone bright red.
Good evening, Wren. I took the liberty of assuming the master would allow me to use the room in his absence. I see you made a similar assumption about the smoking leaf. Shall I let the master know you've arrived? You can also bring me some coffee. Coffee? Of course.
The butler and his red setter demon leave. Stelmaria, Lord Asriel's demon, a snow leopard, watches them disappear.
Are you going to show the slides in here, Asriel? It's somewhat cramped.
Yes, Stelmaria. Claustrophobia will make my most horrible exhibit even more frightening, and it will loosen the college purse strings.
You ought to be resting, not raising funds.
Coffee, Lord Asriel. Thank you, Wren. Is that Tokai I can see on the table? Yes, the master ordered it decanted especially for you, my lord. How very thoughtful. I'll leave the tray beside me. Oh, and fetch the two cases I left in the lodge. I'll also need a screen and a projecting lantern. Very good, my lord. Stelmaria, I think I'll have some of the master's Tokai. He's in a generous mood for a change. That bodes well.
No, don't drink it!
Lyra, what the hell are you doing here?
Let go and I'll tell you.
How dare you come in here?
I just saved your life.
Explain yourself, girl.
That wine's poisoned. The master put some white powder in it.
Right, back in. Make a noise and you wish you were dead. Do you understand?
Yes.
Ow, you stood on me again.
Well, move then.
Enter. Cases, my lord. Put them on the table.
Lord Asriel watches the butler, choosing his moment before kicking the table leg and sending the decanter toppling. A flood of poisoned wine streams over the expensive, if threadbare, carpet.
Damn you, Wren! Look what you've done! I'm truly sorry, my lord. I must have been closer than I thought. Get something to clear up the mess. Hurry up! Of course. Since you're in there, Lyra, make yourself useful. Watch the master closely.
Uncle Ezreal, what if I want to sneeze?
Then get Pan to smother you. Yeah, projecting lantern on screen, my lord. Set the lantern up by the wardrobe, and I'll have the screen at the other end, by the window.
When the screen and lantern are in place, the butler drops to his hands and knees and works a cloth into the carpet, wincing at the strong smell of detergent. But then his red setter demon starts lapping at the edge of the spill, and the butler can taste the Tokai. He smiles to himself before catching Fidelia by her neck and pulling her away. Later tonight, he'll wonder why they both have a bellyache.
Have they finished dinner? Very nearly, my lord. The master and his guests won't linger when they know you're here. Shall I take the coffee tray? Yes, take it and go.
Asriel. We must be very wary of our host.
I can't take the master's attempt on my life personally, Stelmaria. He's a pragmatist. He acts to protect Jordan College.
Lord Asriel!
Master, I came too late and didn't wish to disturb your dinner. So I made myself at home. I'd offer you some of the delicious Tokai, only the butler knocked it over before I'd even enjoyed one glass. You can imagine my disappointment.
I can. And you can probably imagine mine, too.
Yes. It's almost tangible.
Let me prepare some poppy seed. Let it clarify the mind and stimulate the tongue.
Well, say sort themselves out. I'm going to get a robe to learn.
If you get comfy, you'll fall asleep.
Then wake me up. I don't want to miss anything.
Gentlemen, I'm sure I speak for all of us. When I bid Lord Asriel welcome.
Yes, yes, yes.
His rare visits are always immensely valuable. Yes. I imagine there will be some questions. Please keep them brief. Lord Asriel, would you care to begin?
Thank you. Perhaps the master would like to have the chair near the wardrobe.
That's so we can watch his reactions.
The devil, these.
He knew about the wine.
He's going to ask for funds, Master. If he forces a vote...
We must argue against him.
Lord Asriel drops a photographic slide into the metal frame at the front of the projector.
Gentlemen, scholars, as you know, I set out for the North 12 months ago on a diplomatic mission to the King of Lapland. In truth, my real aim was to go further north to try to discover what had happened to the Grumman expedition. The photograph was taken with a standard silver nitrate emulsion. This was taken in the Arctic Circle. Notice the horizon's clearly visible, and in the middle distance there's a hut with a snow-covered roof. The man in the foreground seems bathed in light, and there's a fountain of glowing particles streaming to his upraised hand.
That light, is it going up or coming down?
It's coming down, but it isn't light. It's dust.
But how...
It registered as light. As you see, the man is perfectly visible. Now, I'd like you to look at the shape to his left. It's a child.
Is this a child without its demon? One of those dreadful severed beings?
No, an entire child. The demon is to our left and has taken the form of an Arctic fox.
So the child doesn't attract dust?
Evidently not. Now, I'd like to show you another picture.
Is that the...
Aurora Borealis, yes.
It's one of the best photographs of the phenomenon I've ever seen.
Thank you, Dean. Now, look at a picture taken with a special emulsion I've developed.
If he forces a vote, Dean, we'll invoke the residence clause.
No.
He hasn't been resident in the college for 30 weeks out of the last 52.
And when he is here, he's a damned nuisance.
Good gracious, sir. That looks like a city suspended in the air.
There is indeed a city in another world. In fact, in a parallel universe. It has never been photographed before.
A city in another world?
Dr. Grumman investigating this too?
Yes, but he won't be able to tell you about it because he's dead. I have the proof here.
Lord Asriel opens one of the wooden boxes the butler carried up from the lodge. He carefully parts the straw, then he lifts a heavy glass jar from it. The momentum causes the severed head inside to turn within its green preserving liquid, as though slowly staring down at the assembled and horrified scholars.
Grumman's expedition vanished 18 months ago. It's been assumed that he met with an accident. This was hardly an accident.
Lord Asriel, explain.
Masters, scholars, this is Stanislaw Grumman. I found his body preserved in the ice off of Svalbard. The head was sculpted by his killers. I think you might be familiar with the method, Dean.
I have seen Tartars do this, yes. There is a hole in the top of the skull. Trepanning?
Exactly. And you can see how the bone has begun growing back after the procedure.
Yes.
So the trepanning itself didn't kill him.
And you say you found his body near Svalbard?
That's right. The snow around him was crimson. His was not a quiet, natural death.
Yeah. Are we to understand that the Panzerbjorn, the armored bears, had anything to do with this?
Oh, no, no. They'd never behave in this manner, Master.
We don't know too much about Jofa Rakdason, the new bear king of Svalbard, except he's a powerful and vicious figure with ludicrous affectations. I'm sure most of the company present had heard about his palace built from imported marbles and that he's setting up what he loosely terms a university.
A university for armored bears?
Yes, he tried, unsuccessfully, I might add, recruiting scholars from Jordan College.
Headhunting. He didn't contact me.
Jofa Rakdason will be capable of doing this to Grumman, but at the same time, he could be flattered into behaving quite differently. What he wants above all else is a demon.
Lyra, overcome with gory sights and academic detail, does what all children do when told too much and made too comfortable. She falls asleep. A dreamless hour passes. The scholars leave.
Lyra! Wake up, girl.
I heard everything.
I had a really strange dream.
Quiet! There are still some servants around.
Uncle Ezreal, what's dust?
Nothing to do with you.
In my dream, it was snowing and...
Can I see the man's head?
Don't be disgusting. Did you watch the master?
Yeah. He looked for the wine before he did anything else. And he was whispering to the dean, going on about how you must have guessed the wine was poisoned and how they didn't want to give you any money. Did they give it to you?
Yes. Now, get to bed and say nothing.
I'm not tired. And I want to stay and talk to you.
I haven't got time. I've got things to organise. I'm leaving in 10 minutes.
Where are you going?
Back to the north.
I want to come with you and see dust and stuff. And that city in the air. Is it another world?
I really don't have time for you, Lyra. Go to bed. I'll be back to see you in a year's time.
Lyra, I could tell you my dream. It
was... Shut up, Pan.
Really think he knew about the wine?
Yes. He spilled the decanter himself.
Yeah, I was never happy about the idea of...
Poisoning him?
Of murder.
Well, Providence has intervened. I'm only sorry I burdened you with the knowledge of it, but I consulted their lithiometer and it warns of appalling consequences if Lord Asriel pursues his research.
And we voted to give him the funds to continue.
Apart from anything else, the child will be drawn in now whether I want to protect her or not.
But how do you know that? The lithiometer again?
Yes. Lyra has a major part to play. The irony is that she must act without realizing what she's doing. Mm. She can be helped, though. And if my plan with the Tokai had succeeded, she would have been safe for a little while longer. Yes. Part of her experience will include a great betrayal.
Who's going to betray her?
She will be the betrayer. And the experience will be terrible.
It seems strange to think that our fate will be decided by the actions of a little girl.
That's the problem, Dean. She won't be a little girl for much longer.
Roger, let's go down to the cellars. I've got the butler's spare set of keys.
How'd you get those?
Lifted him off the hook when his back was turned. Come on. Look at all the cobwebs and all this wine and brandy and stuff. You've got to try it out here.
You're too young, and it's not us.
So? This is the dustiest and twistiest. Wonder what's in it.
You ain't got anything to open it with.
Watch me.
You'll cut your mouth, Lyra. Look at Pantalimon. He don't like what you're up to.
I don't, and neither does Salcilia. You'd better not try it, Roger.
Pity, because it's delicious. Oh, go on, Roger. It won't bite you.
Don't just do what Lyra says.
I'm not.
Oh, you're too easily led.
What do you think?
It's okay, but I'd rather have cocoa.
Will we know when we're drunk?
Dunno. Most scholars seem a bit surprised when they try to stand up at the end of dinner. Hey, look at Pan and Cecilia. They're like the things on top of the chapel. What's it?
Yeah, gargles.
Never seen demons do that before.
Well, we've never drunk this stuff before, so it's all new, isn't it?
Oh, I feel sick. Do the scholars, do they... Is it like something they enjoy?
Yeah. Pan and me sometimes go down and watch him falling over. Master usually chases us off. He never gets drunk, him.
You're making that up about the scholars.
I'm not. Let's go to the crypt.
Pooh, it smells a bit.
It's bound to. It's full of dead people. All the previous masters were buried here. Look, this one's Simon Leclerc, Masters 1765 to 1789. Keribatan Requiescanton Parche.
What's that mean?
That's his name, then his demons, and then some Roman stuff.
These coffins have got skeletons in them. Must be ghosts down here. Lyra, what are you doing?
I just want to have a look at his skull.
Don't touch it! Don't pick it up!
Oh, something's fallen out. Can you see what it is?
It's a coin! Treasure!
Let me have a look. There's a picture on it of a pig. That'd be his demon.
Put it back!
Who do you think this lot were, the ones that are just skulls?
Scholars. The head's the most important part of them. Put the coin back!
Lyra reluctantly posts the coin back through Simon Leclerc's left eye socket, as other children in other worlds might drop their pocket money into the back of a ceramic pig. The regular Oxford market is held every Tuesday and Friday on the broad common by the canal. Children dodge between stalls, Egyptians trade horses, local people haggle. Tony Macarius, a small, lean, scabby boy of 9 with the face of an old man, in desperate need of food, spots a pie just begging to be stolen. He turns to his demon, Ratter.
Got to get something to eat, Ratter. Can you turn into a sparrow and flirt the stallholder's face?
Yeah, mine is hot. Look at the steam coming off it.
Don't mind hot, just got to get something to eat. Right!
Oi! Come back here, you little beetle!
Lyra and Roger watch Tony Macarius run, but they quickly lose interest. They want to find their friend, Billy Costa. Lyra spotted his family's boat moored on the canal close by.
Look, Roger, there's Mar Costa.
Mar Costa is Billy Costa's mother. She's strong and tall and powerful, and Lyra's a little afraid of her, as are all the children. But today, Lyra sees an expression on her face that she's never seen before. Mar Costa looks very, very scared.
Well, what have you done with him, you half-assed pillock? Where's my son, Billy?
I don't know. I never saw where he went. I'm not his mother.
He was holding your bloody horses.
He should have stayed put then. You gypsies want to take better care of your brats.
You piece of dung.
Ah, what's she so angry about?
Sounds like Billy's run off.
At the same moment, Tony Macarius runs down a gloomy alleyway. He squats down and eats, too hungry to bother about an immaculately dressed woman walking towards him from the rectangle of light where the alley opens out onto the main road. He just wants to eat. He accepts the woman's presence and that of her golden monkey demon.
Hello. What's your name?
Tony.
Where do you live, Tony?
Clarice Walk.
What's in that pie?
Beefsteak.
It smells delicious. I bet you like cocoa too. Would you like some? Now come along. There are other children waiting. You'll be able to make some new friends.
Tony is led to a part of Oxford he has never visited, despite it being close to the market. 10 silent children turn to stare at him. 10 agitated demons transform themselves into a bestiary as he descends the steps of a cellar.
Here, sit on this bench. You can have some cocoa when you've finished your pie.
What are you guys here for?
You're going to be very special children indeed.
Back in the marketplace, a distraught Mar Costa approaches Lyra and Roger.
You're Billy's friends. Have you seen him?
I haven't seen Billy for months. I just come looking for him now.
Billy?
Billy!
Bet the gobblers have got him.
Of course they haven't. Billy's always up to stuff. They've been stealing kids all over the country. You don't know that.
There's a kid missing from the back of Jordan College too.
Who?
Jessie Reynolds, out of the Saddlers. She'd only gone out for a bit of fish for her dad's tea. I searched everywhere. She might have turned up by now. Before we get back, I just want to have a look at the music boxes.
All right.
Huddled in the cellar are a group of increasingly frightened children, each having succumbed to the kind words and loveliness of the woman with the golden monkey demon, each having been persuaded to go with her despite all the warnings against trusting strangers. Each child shivers on the point of tears, but the doorway is barred and guarded.
Children, listen. You're all going on a voyage. You'll be well fed and warmly clothed, and those who want to can send messages back to their families.
I can't write.
Well, that's a pity.
Are you a gobbler?
Yes, I am. And I'm not the least bit frightening, am I? And here's someone else come to help me. Hello. Come over here and talk to Tony. What's your name?
Roger Parslow. But I've got to get back. That man asked me if he'd like some cocoa, that's all.
What could be more important than helping me, Roger?
80 pasties. I've got to help make 80 pasties back at Jordan College. Or my aunt will kill me.
Come on, Pan. We better get back. Where's Roger got to?
He was over by the music box store.
What's the time?
5:30.
That's why he's gone back. He's supposed to help out in the kitchen from 6.
We can check to make sure.
Yeah, but he'll be there. He gets a good wallop if he's late. Where's Roger? Is he here?
No, he should be. There's 80 pasties to make.
But where is he?
Oh, he'll be somewhere.
They've got him. The bloody gob goblins.
Don't be silly, Lyra, and mind your language. Roger's sensible.
You don't care. Or you go and look for him right now. I hate you.
Oh, I've lost count of the number of times you've hated me for this and that, Lyra. Look, there could be a dozen reasons why Roger ain't turned up. Yeah, and don't you go running off. I want you back in your room for a wash. Right, there you are, girl. Now, come on, take off this filthy dress. Look at the state of your wardrobe. You ain't hung nothing up for weeks. Right, this frock will have to do.
You've got flour on your face.
And you've got dried mud. All right, lift your arms. Let's put it on.
I don't want to. I want to look for Roger.
Wash. You get all that dirt off your legs.
You don't care about Roger neither. I'm the only one that does. Ow!
Don't you chide me, girl. I care about the boy. God knows I even care about you.
Anyway, why am I having to wash?
Like I said, you're going to have dinner with the master and his guest. I hope to God you behave.
I was told to come.
Ah, yes, Lyra. Come sit over here. Oh, Pantalaimon looks very sleek. He's an urban, isn't he? Mrs. Coulter, this is our Lyra.
Hello, Lyra.
Your demon's beautiful. I've never seen a golden monkey before.
He's called Ozymandias.
Mine's called Pantalaimon. Are you a scholar?
Not really.
You don't look like one. I mean...
I don't, do I?
Mrs. Coulter tells a good tale, and Lyra is very quickly bewitched by her. The golden monkey demon, Ozymandias, turns his black eyes on the girl, watching her fall under Mrs. Coulter's irresistible charm.
And does your uncle, Lord Asriel, have any plans for you?
He's going to take me to the north next time he goes.
Oh, yes, I remember him telling me.
Are you an explorer too?
In a way. Last year I spent 3 months in Greenland making observations of the aurora.
Oh, I'd love to do that.
And I learned to make igloos, to hunt seals and negotiate with the Lapland witches, drive a sled...
The master of Jordan College looks on with increasing dismay as Mrs. Coulter works her way into the child's imagination. He even forgets to eat. His raven demon Leonore bobs and dips and ruffles.
So, Lyra, would you like to come and live with me? We might have to travel to the north in a month or so.
Oh, yes. And you'd really take me with you?
Certainly. Then, when you return to Jordan College, you'll be a famous traveller. So, what do you say?
Oh, yes. Yes, please.
You're sure about this, Lyra?
It's everything I've ever wanted to do, to go exploring and that.
Well, Master, there's your answer.
Under the circumstances, I could hardly have expected anything else.
Now we're going to leave for London by the dawn zeppelin. So go straight to bed. Good night.
Good night, Mrs. Coulter.
Come and give me a hug, then.
Come on, Pan. Oh, good night, Master.
Good night, Lyra.
Lyra! Lyra, wake up, child! The master wants to see you. Get up quickly and run across the lodging. Now tap on the French windows. You understand? Don't let anyone else see you.
Yes, but...
Go straight down and come straight back. Hurry now!
Aren't I going?
Yes. I can't prevent it. Lyra, I'm going to give you something and you must promise to keep it private.
The master carefully removes a heavy yellow gold instrument from a worn velvet bag. At first glance, it looks as if it might tell you the time or the direction, but it won't. There's a flat dial, the edge is decorated with symbols, three hands flicker across the face, two are the same length, one is a little longer. The back is slightly convex, and the whole thing fits comfortably into the master's palm.
What is that? It's beautiful.
An alethiometer. It's one of only six that were ever made. Lyra, show no one. It would be better if Mrs. Coulter didn't know. And you must try to learn to use it, because your Uncle Asriel...
But what does it do?
It tells you the truth.
Come on, Lyra. They're waiting.
Go well, Lyra. Bless you, child. Bless you.
What's that you've got?
The master gave it me. Can it go in the suitcase?
No, too late. It'll have to go in your coat pocket. Now hurry, get on board.
Goodbye. Please say goodbye to everyone for me. And Roger, tell Roger to write.
I will, soon as he turns up. Now go on.
Goodbye. I'll come back. Pan, now I'm scared.
So am I.
The goblins really did get Roger, didn't they?
3 weeks after their arrival, Lyra and Pantalaimon are still astonished by the opulence of Mrs. Coulter's London flat. It's warm and airy with sumptuous furnishings. Lyra has a wardrobe of new dresses, and her hair has been cut and styled and now frames her face, making her seem older. She hardly recognizes herself when she looks in the mirror, and Pan has only managed to change into an array of pampered cats and snuffling lapdogs until today. Pan, never entirely convinced of the golden monkey demon's apparent friendliness, has just fought with him over the bag containing Lyra's lithiometer.
You saw what he was up to, Lyra. Why didn't you stop him?
He was playing.
He wasn't.
I'd have felt it if he meant to hurt you. Anyway, you pulled his ear. Mrs. Coulter flinched. That's why they've gone out. Pan, why are you copying Mrs. Coulter's demon if you don't like him?
I'm just seeing what it's like to be a golden monkey. He goes about, oh, look at me, I'm fantastic, showing off and that.
He doesn't. Anyway, he is very handsome.
He was trying to get the aleph thingy.
A lithiometer? I bet he wasn't. He doesn't know I've got it.
He does, and she wants it. Why are you wearing lipstick?
Mrs. Coulter left her makeup bag out for me to try.
It's okay on her, but it looks stupid on you. Like you've been eating jam.
It doesn't. Would you like some on?
No.
Yes, come here. There's some nice sloppy eyeshadow in this cheek.
Get off! Ugh, it tastes horrible.
You're not supposed to eat it.
You squeezed it right in my mouth.
Did not.
Did.
Remember that brilliant water fight we had with Roger in Salcidia?
Yeah.
I wonder what's happened to Roger. No one's written from Jordan, have they? Where is that alethiometer thing?
I hid it in your new shoulder bag.
Why don't we see what it does while she's out? Right. Let's try and work it out. There are three little winding wheels. They circle the dial. Pan, listen. When I turn them, can you hear those clicks? Look. When I try to make the hands point at the pictures, they won't stay put. Did you see that? And this big hand's bobbing about all over the place. What do you think that one's for?
I'll make myself into a mouse to get closer and have a better look. No. It still isn't obvious. There's no small lettering or anything.
Perhaps you've got to give it to Uncle Azrael. It isn't anything we could use, is it?
The master said we had to try and work it out. Hide it.
I didn't hear her come back. Did you?
No. She sneaked in on purpose. She's trying to catch us out.
Have you a little time to spare me, Lyra, now Pan has calmed down?
Yes. Sorry about that, Mrs. Coulter.
That's all right. Cooped up in here with nothing to do, it's bound to happen. That's why I've been thinking. I imagine your education has been a little bit haphazard up to now. I want to arrange for you to have some private tuition before I make any decisions about your future schooling. Why don't you tell me what the scholars taught you?
I know about elementary particles and bits and pieces of experimental theology.
Have you learned about the solar system?
What's that?
The Earth and five other planets revolve around the sun.
Then why don't they bang into each other?
Do you know about electrons?
Oh, yes. They're negatively charged particles. Sort of like dust, except the dust isn't charged.
Quiet, Ozymandias. What do you know about dust, Lyra?
It doesn't affect children.
Where did you learn that?
One of the scholars said.
Was it part of your lessons?
This scholar from New Denmark was talking to the chaplain. I was passing and stopped to listen. That's how I learn most things. Did I get it wrong?
Well, I'm sure you know much more than I do. Please excuse me, Lyra. I've just remembered another appointment.
Yeah.
She grabbed his neck. I thought he was going to attack.
But why? It doesn't make any sense. People were talking about dust at Jordan.
She's obviously not telling you everything. I don't think she has any intention of taking us anywhere except on shopping expeditions.
But she's bought loads of tents and supplies.
That's just to shut you up.
And this evening, Mrs. Coulter is holding yet another cocktail party.
Why, Lyra, you look lovely. Like a little piece of cherry blossom.
Do I?
You're a very pretty girl. Now, come on. I need your help finishing off the table decorations.
Lyra, she's making a pet of you.
But at least I managed to get a bag to keep the alethiometer in.
Lyra, the shoulder bag looks absurd with that dress.
I think it really suits
you. You haven't developed any taste yet. Until you do, I'll tell you what suits and what doesn't. Now, put that bag away in your bedroom.
Shouldn't it be left up to me to choose? So I learn.
Don't cross me, child. Do not cross me. Take that bag into your bedroom and bring back the little cruel work clutch bag.
It's too small for all my stuff. Don't! Please, stop hurting us. It's only a bloody bag.
Demons usually fight each other to resolve an argument or dispute, but it's unusual for an adult demon to tussle with a child's.
You will not use bad language, and you will do exactly as I tell you.
Ow! Yes, I promise!
The first guest will be arriving in a few minutes, and they're going to find you perfectly behaved and without that shoulder bag. Do you understand?
Yes, Mrs. Coulter.
Then kiss me. Now, I'd better go and see if the caterers have fetched enough ice. Warm drinks are horrid.
You're horrid too.
I hate that golden monkey.
I hate her. I hate them both.
You better hide the alethiometer in your bedroom. Put it somewhere you've not hidden it before.
You were right, Pan. She's never going to take us anywhere. And I'll be trapped wearing these stupid dresses forever and ever. Roger would laugh his head off.
The guests arrive. A mixture of scholars of the more fashionable subjects, the young aristocracy, and politicians with their stars in the ascendancy. They ignore Lyra, which gives her the freedom to wander among them and listen in.
I suppose they have to experiment on children. Otherwise, how would they find out?
Gobblers. That's from the initials General Oblation Board. In the Middle Ages, parents gave their children to the church to be monks or nuns. These unfortunates were known as oblates, meaning a sacrifice or offering. Mrs. Coulter has revived the practice.
If children can be kept innocent and in a state of grace...
Naturally, there have been casualties. Some of the children haven't survived.
I suppose that's an inevitable consequence of pioneering
research. Mrs. Coulter brought back one of the severed demons. It had gone sort of clear. You could see right through it. It looked like a little chunk of stained glass.
Just see Mrs. Coulter's demon coming out of our bedroom. He's found the alethiometer.
No, he can't have.
What are we going to do?
Well, we know Mrs. Coulter's involved with the gobblers. The alethiometer might be something she could use, you know, to catch more children.
Did you hear? Lord Asriel's captured.
Held in the fortress at Falbar and guarded by the Pansopion. Armored bears. Have you ever seen one? He won't escape.
The last experiments have confirmed the dust is an emanation from the Dark Principle itself. It's pure evil.
I think all of us would agree that loss of innocence is the worst thing that happened to us.
Are children innocent? I mean...
That little girl, Lyra, is it? She'll be safe. What with Mrs. Coulter overseeing the experiment at Balbango.
Of course, the ablation board is Mrs. Coulter's dark side. She's queen of the gods.
Pan! Mrs. Coulter! She's...
Yeah, that's why we've not felt right. She's a monster. We've got to escape and tell people. Now we know who she is. They'll be able to stop her.
Where do you think she keeps the children?
I don't know. Not in the flat, anyway. Let's get out, then we can look for them.
Lyra packs the shoulder bag with a few clothes, taking a moment to push a lipstick into the soil of the window box, pulling a wry face as it disappears. She pulls off the hideous pink dress, throws it in a corner, and puts on the clothes she arrived in from Jordan College.
Right. Let's go. There's nobody in the hallway. Come on. What are we going to do? And where are we going to sleep, Pan?
A doorway?
No, we don't want to be seen.
I think the canal's down there.
Right. Let's go down the steps. We can sleep under the bridge. It looks deserted.
Two men suddenly appear out of nowhere and throw a smelly lead-weighted net over them, knocking them to the ground.
Pan! Pan, help us! Somebody please help us!
Then an arrow strikes one of the men in the throat. He drops with a cry. The second man falls with an arrow through his side. Both men seem to fall so slowly that Lyra expects them to zigzag weightlessly in the air. Lyra and Pan are locked tight against each other, stricken with fear. The men's demons fade.
Lyra? It's me, Joey Costa. Used to play with my little brother Billy.
Joey?
That's right. Come on, let's get you out of this.
Oh, we're safe. Pan, we're safe.
You're a long way from Oxford, girl. What are you doing here?
Me and Pan, we've been living in London.
Yeah. Okay, you're free. You alone?
Yeah, we thought...
Don't talk now. Jaxter, move them bodies into the shadow. Kerem, look around. Right, Lyra, come on. Follow me.
Joey guides Lyra and Pan's alignment to the Costa's canal boat.
That's never Lyra.
Costa.
Ma, we gotta move. We killed two men. They caught Lyra. Kerem's undone the mooring and Jaxter's up top. He'll steer.
Lyra, come here, child. You look wore out. What's this on your face? You got makeup on?
She made me wear it.
Who's done that to you, gal?
This woman, Mrs. Coulter. I ended up staying with her.
You can have Billy's crib as soon as I've got a hot drink in you. Set you down there, child.
Where are we going?
Away from here. We'll talk in the morning.
The boat slips quietly along the canal and out of London as Lyra and Pan sleep in Billy's little bed. They wake to the smell of toast, freshly brewed tea and scrambled eggs.
Where are we?
On the Grand Junction Canal. You keep out of sight, child. There's trouble.
What sort of trouble?
Nothing we can't cope with.
Morning, Lyra, Pan. So what were you doing in London?
I was living with Mrs. Coulter. And then last night, I found out she was a gobbler. In fact, she's their leader.
You mean she's in charge of the child abductions?
Yeah. She came to Jordan College. She asked me to come and live with her.
What did the Master of Jordan say?
He wasn't keen. I don't think he likes her. Though he couldn't say so. Anyway, I don't like her. How can I when she's the gobbler?
I dare say there's more to this than we can guess at for the moment. I'll tell you what we know. Children are taken north and they do experiments on them. First we thought they tried out different diseases and medicines, only they don't. And you know, the north's altogether strange. It's filled with spirits. You ever heard of the Nalkynans?
No.
They're the ghosts of the forests. Same size as a child and they got no heads. And windsuckers too. Dangerous. Some people know them as spectres. You come across clumps of them floated together or snagged in bramble. One touch and the strength goes out of you. You forget who you are. Then there's the breathless ones.
It doesn't sound as if there's room enough for normal people.
I have to admit, it's a bit of a crush. Then there's warriors half-killed that can't die, can't live. They wander about forever. The North Tartars snap open their ribs, pull out their lungs. Their lungs can't work without their demons pumping them by hand. You come across old platoons.
That's horrible. Well,
there's more. There's the Pansibjorn. That means armoured bears, like a kind of polar bear.
Oh, yeah, my Uncle Azrael's imprisoned in a fortress guarded by armoured bears.
Is he?
Yeah, they captured him. I don't know why.
What's he doing there again? I thought he'd just come back.
He had. Then Jordan gave him some more money, so he went exploring again. Then he was imprisoned.
Well, he won't get out. Those bears are mercenaries. They got hands like men, and they learnt the trick of working meteoric iron. Vicious killers, too. They keep their word if you make a bargain with them.
You filling her head with stories, Joey?
Some of it's true, Mum.
I bet you didn't tell her which bits, though.
Where are we now?
The Fens.
The Egyptian people have been at worse than most by these gobblers. We're coming to a big meeting of our clans called a roping.
We'll send a rescue party. At least that's what I'd do if I was John Farr.
Who's John Farr?
The king of the Egyptians.
Will they rescue Roger? Or is it only Egyptian kids?
Who's Roger?
My friend. If I was Took, he'd come and rescue me.
Lyra looks out at the grey-blue marshes and the blue-grey sky. Set back into the flat plain is a large wooden barn. People throng through its wide door. Lanterns light the way, and in the moist air, their light seems to drift in speckles, like pollen blown from a flower.
Lyra, we're water people. You ain't. You're most like a marsh fire. You got witch oil in your soul. Deceptive, that's what you are, child.
Deceptive?
I'm paying you a compliment, you gosling.
Oh, right, thanks.
We got here just in time. Come on then, girl.
Put on Billy's oilskins, Lyra, and keep close to Joey.
Joey, what's this place again?
The barn's called a Zaal. See? If you look along the side, it's like an upended boat.
Oh, yeah.
They'll be starting in a moment now.
It's packed.
A ripple of excitement goes through the crowd as John Farr takes the platform. His demon's a great crow.
Egyptians! Egyptians! Welcome to the muster. I'm glad to see the Zaal's filled and that we're all met with one purpose. First, let me clear up the matter about a particular child. The child's name is Lyra Belacqua. She's been sought by the Landlober police. There is a reward of 1,000 sovereigns. But she's in our care. We ain't giving her up. Now, let's talk about the gobblers. These gobblers are taking our children to a town in the far north. And I'm proposing that we send a band of fighters to rescue them. I'm proposing that we put our gold into this, and all the craft and courage that we can muster.
Beg pardon, Lord Farr. There's Landloper kids as well as Egyptians been taken, Captain. Are you saying we should rescue them as well?
Should we fight our way through every kind of danger to a little group of frightened children and then say to some of them that they must stay?
No, Bertie Pierce.
You're a better man than that. Well, do I have your approval, friends?
Aye. If we handed in the child, Lyra Balakwa, we'd have enough money to rescue our kids.
It is a matter of honour and conscience. I would not care to use money gained by the handing over of a child against her wishes. And there have been many times when we have had prices on our heads. And we've been grateful for those who chose to forego the money, despite their great need, so that we could keep our freedom.
Yeah.
I want the heads of families to raise tax and muster levy. We'll meet again here in 3 days' time. Between now and then, I'm going to form a plan to put before you. And good night to you all.
Come on. I'd best take you to pay your respects to Lord Far and Father Coram.
Who's Father Coram?
The old man by his side.
Why is he shaking?
He's old. Now, girl, whatever you're asked, tell the truth.
Welcome, Lyra.
Yeah, welcome, child. I am Father Coram.
Thank you.
Now, come in the parlour room. So who was the lady you ran away from?
Mrs. Coulter. She's like, well, somebody said she was like the Queen Gobbler. But I don't reckon my Uncle Azrael's got anything to do with them.
Why do you think that?
The goblins have got him locked up, guarded by armor bears, because he knows about dust.
It's dust. Did they ever call it anything else?
Well, Mrs. Coulter said it was elementary particles, and there was the Aurora.
The what?
Aurora. Is that right, Larry?
Yeah. And in the lights of the Aurora, there was a city. My Uncle Azrael was more interested in that.
Now, Lyra, Father Coram is a wise man, a seer. He's been following all what's been going on, and he's been following you. Every time the Costas went to Oxford, they brought back a bit of news.
About me?
That's right. We knew you from when you were a baby.
Did you?
And did the Master of Jordan College tell you who your parents were and what happened to them?
Yeah, they died in a Zeppelin accident.
An Egyptian woman told us the true story. Your father is Lord Asriel.
No, he can't be. He would have told me. He would have said, that's not true.
Now, when he was a young man, Lord Asriel went exploring all over the north and came back with a great fortune. Your mother was not so well born as him, but clever, a scholar, and beautiful. She and your father fell in love.
Your mother was already married to a politician. He was doing well for himself.
Your mother found herself with child. When you were born, you were the spit of Lord Asriel. She thought it best to give out that you died, and she took you to Oxfordshire, where your father had estates and put you in the care of an Egyptian woman. But someone whispered to your mother's husband, and he came a-flying down in a murderous passion.
Your father was out hunting, but they got word to him, and he came riding back in time to find your mother's husband about to force open the closet where the Egyptian woman was hiding you. But Lord Asriel challenged and killed him.
Lord Asriel? He hardly visited me at Jordan or anything.
In the end, the judges confiscated Lord Asriel's property and land, and he had been richer than a king.
The Egyptian nurse said she'd been afeard of how your mother would treat you, so she begged to keep you. But we Egyptians got standing in the law, and the court placed you in a priory. St. Michael and All Saints in Babbacom.
Lord Asriel had a hatred of nuns and monks, and being a high-handed man, he carried you off to Jordan College and dared the law to undo
the
it.
The one condition he made was that your mother shouldn't be let see you. All the anger in his nature had turned against her.
Lyra, the man your mother married and whom your father killed was Edward Coulter.
Mrs. Coulter? She ain't my mother. That's even worse.
You look like her. You look just like her. That was why she was getting all dressed up.
But what the Master of Jordan was a-doing letting you go is a mystery. He was supposed to protect you.
Well, he didn't want to. And he gave me something I had to keep a secret from Mrs. Coulter. I think I'm supposed to take it to Lord Asriel. I suppose it's all right to show you.
I never thought I'd set eyes on an alethiometer. Did he tell you about it, child?
Only that I'd have to work out how to read it by myself.
And have you?
No. Well, at least I can make the three short hands point as different pictures. But I can't do anything with the long one. Except sometimes when I'm concentrating, I can make the long needle move by thinking about it.
What's it to do, Father Coram?
It's a truth, really. The pictures round the rim are symbols, each standing for a whole series of things. Take the anchor there. The first meaning is hope, because hope holds you fast like an anchor. The second meaning is steadfastness. The third is snag or prevention. The fourth meaning is the sea, and so on down to 10, 12 or more. To read it fully, I'd need the book.
Go on.
You get three hands you can control, and you use them to ask a question. By pointing to three symbols, you can ask any question you can imagine. Once you've got your question framed, the other needle swings round and points to more symbols that give you the answer.
How's it know what level you're a thing in?
It only works when the questioner holds the levels in their mind.
And you kept it secret from Mrs. Culver?
I tried, but her demon found it.
I see. Well, Lyra, this is my guess. The master was keeping you safe from your mother. So if he gave you up to Mrs. Culver, he must have reckoned you'd be safer with her than at Jordan College. He must have thought Lord Asriel would endanger everyone.
So, am I supposed to keep the alethiometer?
Perhaps Lord Asriel could read some wisdom from the instrument, no bat from his purpose. If he's held captive now, it might help set him free.
Who was the Egyptian woman who nursed me? You didn't say.
Marcosta.
Marcosta? Why do people never say anything? Is there other things I ought to know?
I think that's all, Lyra. But it's enough, eh?
Now you best get back to Marcosta. When 3 days is gone, we'll have another roping.
Three days pass quickly as the Egyptian families raise levies, their sense of dread and foreboding mirrored by the fen mist that coils against the lanterns and glides across the marshes. On the evening of the third day, the Egyptians return to the Zaal carrying hempen sacks filled with gold coins.
That's a muster of 170 men. I thank you proudly. As for the gold, the weight tells me that you've all dug deep in your coffers. My warm thanks for that as well. We're going to charter a ship and sail north. Find the children and set them free. And there might be some fighting to do. And we shall have to be uncommon cunning. But we ain't coming back without our kids. Nicholas Rokeby!
Yes, Lord Farr?
I'm putting you in charge of finding a vessel and commanding her once we set sail.
Aye, aye, sir.
Adam Stefanski.
Yes, Lord Farr.
I want you to take charge of the arms and munitions. Roger Van Poppel.
Yes, Lord Farr.
Stores. From food to cold weather clothing. Simon Hartman.
Yes, Lord Farr.
You'll be treasurer and account to us all for proper apportionment of our gold. Benjamin de Reuter.
Yes, Lord Farr.
I want you to take charge of spying and your report to Father Corum. Michael Canzoner.
Here.
You can coordinate the four leaders' work and your report to me. If I die, you'll take over. Now, is there anyone else who wants to speak? Speak, if you will.
John Farr strikes the closing bell, and the heads of the six families and Farr de Corum retire to the parley room.
Lord Farr, I want to come north. I know what parts of a bear you can eat, and other things.
Lyra, I don't even believe Mrs. Coulter was going to take you. Now, off you go.
You can see the north when all this trouble is over.
We will go, Lyra. We have to. Especially now we know who our parents really are.
We'll stay away, Pan. You can't tell me all that and then just leave me behind.
Let's try Father Corum. Maybe we can persuade him we could be useful.
Father Corum?
Yes, Lyra.
I think it's best if I help you. I know more about the goblins than anyone, being as I was nearly one of them.
You're probably right, Lyra. Come on, let's you and me have a parley. Let's go and sit in the bank, away from all the fuss. Should we have another look at the alethiometer?
All right.
Can you read the symbols?
I'm not sure. What's the hourglass mean, Father Corum? It keeps coming back to that one.
There's often a clue if you look at the symbol on top of it.
The skull.
So what do you think that might mean?
Well, death.
That's right. It's the second meaning, the first being time.
And the needle stopped there on the second go round.
What are you asking it, Lyra?
I was thinking about Mr. de Reuter, and I put together the serpent, the crucible, and the beehive to ask how he's getting on with his spying.
Why them particular symbols?
Well, the serpent is like clever and cunning. The crucible could mean knowledge, and the beehive, well, bees work hard to fetch back to their hive. Only the needle stopped at death.
We may not be reading it right.
It's a bit worrying though, isn't it?
Father Corum! Beg pardon, Father Corum. Jacob Isman's come back and he's wounded.
He's with Benjamin de Reuter. What happened?
You better come.
Father Corum.
What happened, Jacob?
Benjamin's dead and Gerard's captured. We was breaking into the Ministry of Theology because that's where all the orders was coming from for the child snatchers.
Rest. Let your fox demon speak.
They didn't know where the kids were taken, except it was North Lapland. We went to the ministry in Whitehall and got in by a side door.
the place was dark and full of sounds, and Benjamin fell from a high staircase. His demon had fluttered to hold him up, but they perished on the stone floor. Oh, we could see nothing of Gerard. And an arrow pierced us.
Poor man. Joey. See that his family are looked after. Larry, we must go and see John Farr at the Zaal straight away.
So you can read the Alethiometer, Lyra. Well, I think we're going to have to take you with us after all, against my inclinations.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Lyra, it ain't an occasion for joy. I'm putting you under Father Coram's wing. Don't be a nuisance. Now go and pack.
Pantalaimon is now a turn, wheeling and cutting a few feet above Lyra's head as they travel towards the sea on Mar Costa's boat. Father Coram travels with them and remains watchful.
Where are we?
The estuary of the River Cole. I don't suppose it'll matter just for a few minutes if you stay on deck.
And certainly enjoying himself.
Then out of the sky come two small, dark, frantic, malevolent blots which hurl themselves at Pan. They huff and buzz, belting through the air around his head, scarring him with their wire limbs.
Father Coram, help us!
What is it, child?
Pan's been attacked! I caught one of them! Please, can you get it? It's hurting my hand!
It was another! It flew off! It stung and it bit!
Hold still. Here, put a mug over it. Now, if I slip a bit of card under it... Yes, got it!
Well, what is it, Father Coram?
Let's go below and have a look.
You are right, Lyra. I suppose so. What is it, Father Coram?
There's clockwork running it. A pin to the spring is a bad spirit, with a spell through its heart.
But who sends it?
You can guess as easy as I can.
Mrs. Coulter.
It won't never stop. And when you let the spirit free, it's so angry, it'll kill the first thing it gets at.
But what was it after?
Spying on us! I was a cursed fool to let you up above me.
The girl needed air.
Can we kill it?
No. We shall just have to keep him shut up tight in a box and never let him out. What worries me is the other one. He'll be flying back to Mrs. Coulter with news that he's seen you. Damn me, Lyra. I'm a fool. Let's see if I can find a smoke leaf tin to keep him in. As soon as we get about the ship, I'll run some solder around the edge to make sure of it. Get in there!
Doesn't clockwork run down?
This is kept tight wound by fury. Now let's put this fella out of the way.
Lyra pulls on Billy Costa's oilskins, hooding her distinctive dark gold hair in case the spy fly is waiting to catch her again. Pan slips into her pocket momentarily as a flapping fish, and he hops to her shoulder as a black-headed gull. They follow Father Coram up the gangplank, pausing to wave to Mar Costa. Lyra stares up at the first fully rigged ship she has ever seen. She goes solemnly below deck with Pan as a calico cat.
Father Coram, we lost more of our spies.
We have bad news, too. There are two of these clockwork devils sent a spying. I found Lyra. We only caught the one.
I've heard of these, but never seen one. No use dropping it in the ocean, because one day the tin had rust through and out the devil will come. Now we'll have to keep it by and exercise our vigilance.
Oh, the ship's shaking. Where are we going?
Well, I've decided to make for Trollesund, the main port of Lapland. The witches have a consulate there, and we need their help. Father Coram knows the Lapland witches, and if I'm not mistaken, there's a obligation there.
It was 40 years back, but that's nothing to a witch.
You saved a witch's life, Lyra.
I did. She was pursued by a great red bird, and she fell injured in the marsh and was drowning. I got her on board. Had the most grim shock, because she had no demon. The witches have the power to send their demons on the wind or down below the ocean. And this witch had been resting above an hour when a demon came flying back. She said I was to call on her help, if ever it was needed.
Does she live in Trollesund?
No, she lives by a lake, not in a seaport among men and women. I'm hoping to get word to her.
Lyra, go above deck and explore.
That other spy fly won't be waiting.
No, it will have gone back to Mrs. Coulter. Here, take an apple from supplies.
Thank you. Hello.
Oh, hello. I see your demon's enjoying being a seabird.
Yeah.
Mine's a seagull. You see her there on the capstan with her head tucked into a wing? That's my Belisaria. When I first went to sea, she hadn't settled on a form. I was that young. And she loved being a porpoise. I was afraid she'd settle like that. There was an old sailorman on my first vessel who could never go ashore at all because his demon had settled as a dolphin.
I want Pantalaimon to be able to change forever. So does he.
Well, there is compensations for the settled form.
Such as?
Knowing what kind of a person you are. Well, take old Belisaria. She's a seagull. And that means I'm a seagull too. Not grand, nor beautiful, but I'm tough. And I can survive anywhere and always find a bit of food and company. And that's worth knowing.
Suppose your demon settles in a shape you don't like?
Then you're discontented, aren't you? Oh, there's plenty of folks who'd like to have a lion but end up with a poodle. You can laugh, but I've seen it. Hey, this girl I knew from school, she ended up with an ostrich.
After a few days of reasonable weather and moderate seas, with temperature falling and ice starting to cling to the rigging, the ship begins to rock from side to side instead of plunging and soaring. Seals swim alongside. Land nears. Lyra and the Egyptians disembark at Trollesund. At the dock gates, they divide into work parties, some to buy maps of the local terrain, and others, knowledge from the local trappers. Lord Farr goes to secure provisions and hire dog teams and sledges, whilst also hoping to pick up local gossip for clues to the children's final destination. Lyra and Far Decorum set off to visit the Witch's Consulate, a small green house, smooth as a sea pebble, set in a quiet square behind a line of fir trees. Far Decorum already knows the consul, Dr. Lansalius.
Far Decorum, child. Come in, come in.
Dr. Lansalius, this is Lyra Balaqua.
Hello.
In their youth, both men were loved by witches.
Please, sit down. We were young men when we last met, Far Decorum.
Our witches are still young women.
Human lives are brief by their standards. How can I help you?
Well, Dr. Lansalius, I'm anxious to get in touch with Serafina Pecola. She promised help if I should need it.
Serafina Pecola is now queen of her witch clan in Lake Anara.
I didn't know. Never thought we'd have cause to meet again.
I shall send word to her. Ruta Skadi, the mother of my daughters, is queen of her southern clan.
Have you heard of an organization capturing children and bringing them north?
Yes. They avoid alerting the authorities, but I saw another 12 children arrive recently. They moved out the day before yesterday, traveling north, and seemed well cared for, but not happy.
If you were me, what question would you ask the Consul of Witches?
Where I could obtain the services of an armored bear to protect my expedition and fight.
The bears are all allies of the Oblation Board.
Yorick Bjørnsson isn't. He earns a living working at the sledge depot. Now, Lyra, I believe you possess an alethiometer.
Yes, here it is, Dr. Lansalius.
Exquisite. How do you read it?
You have to find the right level in the symbols. There's only ever one in focus, but I'm still learning, really.
Lyra, behind this house, there are several sprays of cloud pine. Ask the alethiometer which Serafina Pecola used recently for flying, and bring me a sprig.
Oh, yeah, I can do that.
Serafina was here.
Yes, briefly.
Could she have known I was coming?
It's quite possible. Far Decorum, this child has a great destiny that can only be fulfilled in ignorance and not in this world. Without this child, we shall all perish.
I know something of the prophecy, but
can't say I understand it. This journey, I think it may be the beginning. And I am already frightened for her.
Here's the carbine that Seraphina Pekala used for flying. It was obvious.
Remarkable, Lyra. Here is a cloudberry twig. Look after it. You are remarkably skilled with the alethiometer. Very gifted indeed.
Thank you, Dr. Lasalius.
We mustn't keep you from your business any longer. I'm grateful for your advice and sincerely glad we've spoken after so long.
Goodbye, Father. Lyra, go well.
Father Coram and John Farr buy Lyra a parka made of reindeer skin, the hood lined with wolverine fur because it sheds the ice formed by breath. They buy her underclothes and bootliners of reindeer skin and silk gloves to go inside fur mittens. Her boots are soled with the skin of bearded seals. And finally, there's a waterproof cape made of semi-transparent seal intestine. With a silk muffler around her neck, a woolen cap over her ears, she is comfortably warm.
Well, Father Coram, I hired a Texan aeronaut whom I met in the tavern.
What's an aeronaut?
A balloonist.
Oh, right.
In the expedition they've been attached to failed through lack of funds.
I can see why he'd want to be hired. But do we need him?
He's flown over the terrain. Knows it well.
I've never been up in a balloon. Is it practical in severe weather? Blizzards and the like?
Of course. You can travel where dogs and sledges can't.
I suppose it'd be the practical matter of filling this balloon.
He'd hardly hire himself out as an aeronaut if he couldn't.
This is true.
As for the consul's advice, the bear will be surly, but I suppose we must have him. What of your witch?
She's a long way off. I hope my message will reach her.
Seems like we struck luckier coming here.
Luckier still, if we had a clear idea of where we were going.
We're going north, Father Coram.
There's a lot of north in these parts, John. Now, Lyra, let's you and I visit the bear.
I've never seen a polar bear before.
Your sort's a stranger to both of us, though. Lord Farr's fought alongside them. Come on.
I'll get back to the ship and pack up in readiness for going north.
Lyra follows Father Coram to a scrubby area of waste ground pitted with grey rocks. They stop at a lean-to made of corrugated iron. The shadow of a tall, powerful bear falls across them.
Yorick Bernison! May I speak to you?
Who are you?
I'm Father Coram from the Egyptian people of East Anglia. And this little girl is Lyra Belacqua.
Lyra Belacqua.
Yes. We want to offer you employment.
I am employed here. I mend articles of iron.
What kind of work is that for a Panzerbjorn?
What work are you offering?
We're moving north so we can find a place where the dust hunters have taken children captive. We'll have to fight to get them free.
What will you pay?
Gold?
No, good. These men took my armor away after they gave me spirits to drink. If you want my service, get me back my armor.
That will be difficult.
Yes, impossible.
Well, we will have to try.
Back in their cabin, Pantalaimon turns into a polar bear cub, rearing up and sheathing his claws and loping as best he can across their tiny cabin. Lyra consults the alethiometer and then joins Lord Farr and Father Coram for a supper of herring, followed by frozen milk with mixed berries.
I've heard this bear's a dangerous rogue. When they first took his armor, he killed two men.
I thought it was more of a situation than he told us. We could hardly expect the townsfolk to return it now.
Excuse me, Lord Farr. I know where it is. The alethiometer showed me.
Did it now?
And Yorick Bernison was telling the truth about them seeing it.
Well, that may be. But we must still go and negotiate with the Sizelman and his council.
But they're not going to listen. Oh, why has the light changed?
Yes, what is it?
It's the Aurora Borealis.
Really?
Yes. Go up and have a look.
Northern lights. Northern lights flickering and flackering. Hammer in its left hand. Birch bark in its right.
What's it mean, hammer and birch bark?
Hammer's the vengeance of angels for disrespect and disbelief. And the birch bark bears their fire to burn up sinners. Hurry up then. Go and see it.
Come on, Pan. Let's go.
Lyra and Pan, still as a polar bear cub, look up to see a large chasm in the sky. There's a sudden arc of rippled fire that people say is the bridge Bifrost, which carries souls to the next world. Suddenly, there's a city in the sky behind the streams of color, with towers and domes, honey-colored temples and sunlit parkland. It resembles the one Lyra saw on Lord Azrael's photograph.
I feel dizzy. Like I'm looking down, not up. What's that?
I think it's a bird.
It's massive. Look how big its wings are.
Where's Father Coram?
Oh, he's a witch's demon. Like the one Father Coram said about.
I'm here, Kaiser. Welcome. How is Seraphina Pecola?
She's well and strong and sends her greetings. Who are these two people?
John Farr and Lyra Belacqua.
Lyra Belacqua is talked about among witches.
Am I?
Have you come to make war, Father Coram?
No. We're going to free the children taken from us by the Dust Hunters. I hope the witches will help.
Some clans work with the Dust Hunters.
What is dust? Does anyone yet know?
It comes from the sky and strikes fear into the Magisterium. So it must be beyond their full understanding and their immediate control. That's why they have established an experimental station.
Where is this station?
4 days north of here at Borvanger. The name means evil place.
Kaiser, sir. Can you tell us how to get there? To Borvanger?
Yes.
Lyra rises early next morning to find that Father Coram and Lord Farr have returned to the town.
They're talking with the Sizelman to negotiate over the bear's armor. You've seen this bear then, Lyra?
Yeah. He's very... Oh, hang on. Who's just coming up the gangplank?
Dunno. A bit of a dandy. He's even got silver spurs.
Annie! Let me introduce myself. Lee Scoresby. Aeronaut, balloon supremo, cosmopolitan internationalist, citizen of the air, and a 6'5" Texan. You must be Lyra and Pantalema. And I presume you're Mr. Costa.
You presume correctly.
And I'm Hester, Lee's demon. And all the things he is except height. And I'm a hare.
I presume I was expected, little lady. Mr. Costa?
Where's your balloon?
There's two balloons, and both are packed up neat as the parson's hanky. Compact as a herd of mustangs galloping through a ravine. I've flown over all things geographical. Tableland, mountains, deserts, filled here and there with the optical illusions of cities and towns. Where a person will look up at you, and they seem tall enough for you to ruffle their hair with your hand, though they're 3,000 feet below. But, blessed Purple Sage, I haven't asked how you got on with Yorick Bjornason.
Oh, you know him?
Hell, I've known Yorick for years. He's a problem and no mistake.
He wants his armor back.
And he'll be mad as hickory till he gets it. Now, Mr. Costa, how'd you like to try your chance against a Texan with little practical experience of the gaming table?
Lyra, while they're playing cards, go straight to the bear and tell him where his armor is. As soon as the townspeople know what's going on, they'll move it elsewhere.
Yorick Bjornason!
Well?
Lord Farr and Father Coram have gone to try and get your armor for you. But I know where it is.
How do you know?
Well, I've got a symbol reader. If I tell you, will you help me rescue the kids from Borvanger?
Yes.
Why didn't you just make some more?
My armor is made of sky iron. Where is it?
You gotta promise not to take vengeance.
All right. But they fight, they die.
It's in the priest's house.
I owe you a debt, Lyra Belacqua.
At the priest's house, Yorick Bjornason rises to his full height and leans against the door. It crumbles like a bank of snow. The priest holds up his hand to show the ring of the Magisterium, and Yorick fells him with one swipe of his powerful left paw.
Have mercy, please! Please don't hurt me! You must not hurt me! I am the representative of the Magisterium!
Magisterium means nothing. You mean less. You denied me my armor.
No, No, I didn't take it from you. They left it here for safekeeping.
Why shouldn't I crush you as you have tried to crush me?
Lyra runs into the house, finds the armor thrown against a wall, and tries to drag it outside, but the weight is astonishing. The armor stays on the floor, as if it were bolted there.
Geralt, leave him! The armor's here! It's here inside!
I shall take it now.
Yorick raises his paw and rolls the priest out into the street. Then he carries his armor down to the harbor. It's rusted from neglect. As Lyra watches, he leaps into the water, catches and kills a plump seal. He drags its body onto the dock and opens it with one swipe of his claws. Then he starts rubbing the hot blubber into the metal, cleaning every inch until the sheen returns and the bolts and links and joints move smoothly again. Satisfied, Yorick looks up to see a face he recognizes as the mob of townspeople gather behind him at the dock gates. Some are already holding him in their rifle sights.
Mr. Scoresby, are you with the Egyptians?
Sure am, Yorick Bjornason. Seems we're both hired hands. Here comes the boss. With some angry locals.
Don't burn Sir Salim now or they'll destroy him.
I guess that's mutually agreeable, Yorick.
I have what they stole from me. I have my own self-regard.
Egyptians! The road lies open! Lyra, get in the back of Father Corrin's sledge. Lee, are you loaded?
Ready to go, Lord Farr.
And you, Yorick Burnson.
When I am clad.
Yorick Bjornason girds himself in readiness. Helmet, breastplate, backplate, glint and clatter.
I am ready.
Following the compass north, the spruce and pine grow ever more stunted. They travel till nightfall.
Stop here! Set up camp!
Lyra, can you see the Alethi armor to read it?
Yes, Lord Far.
I want to know how they're defending Bolvanger.
There's a company of Tartars. 60 men with rifles. And the demons are all wolves.
It's a Sabirsk regiment.
Sabirsk, yeah.
It also says there's a village where the folk are troubled by a ghost of a child.
I don't know what anyone could do about that. 60 riflemen. Mr. Scoresby?
60 armed men. I guess they're expecting trouble. They'll just have to provide the sort they weren't expecting.
Yorick, have you traveled this way before?
Once.
Is there a village nearby?
Mm-hmm. Over the ridge.
Can you take me there?
I obey, Lord Farr.
Lord Farr, if Yorick Bjornason takes me to the next village, we can find out about the child, but he won't go without your permission.
You sure you need to do this?
The Alethiometer says it's important. I have to.
Very well.
Climb on my back, Lyra Belacqua.
Won't you be too heavy?
Not if you make yourself small. A mouse will do.
Ha-ha! You are the weight of a cup. Look up.
Birds.
Witches, if they are flying to the aid of your enemies, you should all be afraid. Here is the village. What do you want to do now?
Find the child.
I see a child's tracks going into the barn.
I suppose we better go in, Pan, and look for him.
They enter a low wooden barn in which gutted fish dry on racks. The floor is frozen earth.
Pan! Help me see who's here. Please, be a bat. Go and look for the child.
No.
Then be a glowworm and give me some light.
Lyra, don't stay here. No. No, something's very wrong. Leave.
What if it's Roger?
Then he's changed. And I'm very scared of him.
Suddenly, a thin, wizened boy crawls towards them.
He has no demon.
Ratta. You got my Ratta?
No. Sorry, I haven't. What's your name?
Tony Macarius. Where's Ratta?
Come on, Tony. We're going to take you somewhere safe.
I don't know where my Ratta is.
Gracious God, Lyra. What have you found?
This is Tony. They must have cut his demon away.
In Bolvanger. They done this. They took my Ratta.
Build that fire up and eat some soup. Father Corrin, is your shelter rigged?
It is, John. Bring her over, get her warm.
And the boy? Bring Tony.
Lyra, wake, childie. I'm
afraid Tony died an hour ago. John Farr's ordered a fire made. They're going to cremate him. The ground's too frozen for burial. But we have brushwood here and coal oil.
Can I see him?
Of course, child.
Mr. Scoresby, give me your knife.
Here. Just watch yourself. It's recently wedded.
Good. And I've got a gold coin. I'll scratch Rest's name on it. Tony will be provided like a Jordan scholar. See, I'll place it in your mouth.
Lyra struggles to prise open the thin-set jaw, and she slides the coin between his clenched teeth. Then it's the dawn of the bitterest day.
Fardacorum? What's happened to the spy fly?
It's down in the bottom of that bag. Put it back when your curiosity is sated, Lyra. I'm away to talk with Lord Farr. We shall be heading for severer weather and maybe coming close to where the children are kept.
Yurik Merzen, can you make a keeping tin for the spy fly in the shape of the alethiometer? Something with moss and lichen packed in to smother the noise. I've got an idea it might be worth having.
As a decoy?
Yeah.
I need metal.
Well, here's a biscuit tin. I ate the last couple to empty it.
Yurik Bjornason takes the tin, opens it out and scores it with his claws. Then he folds and laps it, the metal pliant as a summer leaf.
Oh, it's exactly the same size and shape as the alethiometer. Thank you. Yurik, is it hard not having a demon? Don't you get lonely?
Bears are made to be solitary.
What about the Svalbard bears? Aren't there thousands of them?
I was exiled from Svalbard for killing another bear and sent to live at the edge of the human world. My armor forfeit.
Why did you kill the other bear?
I was out of my own control.
If the Svalbard bears took your armor away, where did you get this set from?
I made it myself, from sky metal. Bears can make their own souls.
Could the bears be defeated?
No. You have seen my armor. Now look at my weapons.
Yurik Bjornason unsheathes his razor-sharp, knife-long claws.
Wow, those are really scary.
And we see tricks and deceit as plain as arms and legs. Now go, whilst I eat.
Fardacorum, can I ride with Lee Scoresby?
If Mr. Scoresby is willing.
Sure. I'm on board, Lyra. I guess you've got enough questions to occupy a cyclopedia maker. Bush!
Mr. Scoresby, could you fly to Svalbard?
Yeah, Lyra, I wouldn't dare. I can't imagine what circumstance would tempt me to try.
What if you and Venison wanted to go back?
We'd tear them to pieces, me included.
How would you inflate your balloons, Mr. Scoresby?
Well, child, I look for vents close to fire mines, or pour sulfuric acid on iron filings and draw off the gas.
How many people can you carry?
Six. Most would jump out short of their destination if you kept up this questioning.
Could you carry Yurik in his armor?
You're still thinking about getting him back to Svalbard. I rescued him one time from the Tartars. That was difficult enough. Hang on to your questions. It's gonna be a bumpy ride. They're headed for fog.
The fog is perfect for an ambush.
We're being attacked! Get down! Get under cover!
Pantalaimon becomes a leopard, the better to guard Lyra.
Lie down! You're less of a target!
Lyra falls into the snow.
Let me turn over. I want to see what's happening.
Egyptians attempt to protect their sledges, whilst Yurik Bjornason charges, the arrows deflected by his armor. But Lyra is the Samoyed hunter's quarry. They find her easily and truss her, covering her face with a sack. Immobilized and fearful, she is carried a short distance and thrown onto a sledge. The fog shields her from the Egyptian's view.
Pan!
I'm here. Keep still. Shh! I'm a mouse now. I'll ease the hood so you can breathe better.
Thank you. Who are they?
They look like Tartars, but I don't think they are.
You should have been watching the alethiometer.
Hush! Pretend you're unconscious.
They'll take us to the goblins. They'll sever us like they did Tony Macarius.
We won't let them.
After a terrible journey, the sledge halts. Somebody removes the sack from Lyra's head and hauls her upright. She sits, blinking at a squat, grey, functional building, resembling the annex of a hospital. A man takes her by the shoulders and half-carries her indoors.
Do you speak English?
Yes.
Does your demon always take that form?
Pantalaimon changes from a mouse to a falcon and attacks the man.
Not fixed. Right. And what's your name?
Lizzie Brooks.
Welcome, Lizzie.
Lyra, be really slow and stupid.
Oh, the nurse! Pam, look! She hasn't got a demon.
Sister Clara, can you see to her?
Of course, Doctor. Come with me, dear. How old are you?
11.
We'll see if you're nice and healthy, and then we'll pop you in the shower. You haven't changed or washed for days, have you, Lizzie?
No.
And what's this in your pocket?
Oh, a toy. It's mine.
It's very pretty. Like a compass, isn't it? Now, into the shower with you. Right, put on these pajamas and the dressing gown.
Well, these don't belong to me.
Your clothes need a good wash.
She wants her toy back.
Wouldn't you rather have a pretty doll?
I have the doll as well, thank you.
Good girl. We'll go and find you something to eat. You must be hungry after getting lost.
I wasn't lost.
Wake up. They give us sleeping pills. They always do that. What's your name?
Lizzie.
Lizzie.
Are there boys here as well?
Yeah.
What's it like?
If you don't think about it too much, it's okay. Sometimes we all get really scared. But mostly it's boring.
It's not boring when Mrs. Coulter comes.
Oh, it's okay. He's nervous. Who's Mrs. Coulter?
She's the one that trapped most of us.
Why have they fetched us here?
We're like guinea pigs. It's to do with our demons. I reckon they kill us, and Mrs. Coulter watches.
When's she coming?
Day after tomorrow. Let's get back in bed before they check on us. If they find you out of bed, they do more tests on you. The last girl they caught, they took to that room at the back. The one that says entrance strictly forbidden. And then we never saw her again.
If Roger's here, Lyra, you need to see him before he sees you, or he'll give you away.
Breakfast, children. Form a nice queue. No pushing.
There's Roger. If I turn into a fly, I can tell him you're here without anyone noticing.
Oh, there's Billy Costa.
Lyra.
Shh. You gotta call me Lizzie.
Why?
Because Mrs. Coulter knows me.
How come?
Well, it'd take too long to explain. But look, your brother's coming, and Lord Far, and a whole band of Egyptians.
Yeah.
You all right, Billy?
Yeah. A cornflake gone down the wrong way.
He's Roger.
We're going to be rescued, Roger.
And I found a brilliant hiding place.
Where?
That ceiling panel, over by the lockers.
Yeah? What about it?
It lifts off. You can crawl inside the roof. Uh-oh, here's Dr. Cooper.
Listen, children. This afternoon we're having a fire drill. When the bell rings, you must do what the nearest grown-up says, okay? You all understand? I'll take that as a yes.
Right, Lizzie. Come with me.
Oh, but I...
Don't worry, they always test new children.
We've all had it done. It's okay.
Now, slip your shoes off and stand on the metal plate. Hold your demon. Look forward and stare at the little green light. Good girl. And now, come over to this machine and put your hand into this tube. Straighten your fingers.
Are you measuring dust?
Who told you about dust?
One of the girls. I ain't dusty.
This is different. Now, clench your fist. That's right. Good. Now, if you feel around, you'll find a handle. Fine. Now you'll feel a slight tingling, but it's just a small anbaric current.
Why'd you cut people's demons away?
What?
Another girl said you cut people's demons away.
Nonsense. Oh, there's the fire alarm, Lizzie. Follow Sister Clara.
Her outdoor clothes are in the dormitory building, Doctor. Oh. She can't go out like this.
When I come yesterday, you put my clothes in the cupboard next door.
Go on, then.
Roger, Billy, let's stick together. We need to look around.
They'll notice if we just walk off.
I'm going to make a snowball and chuck it into the crowd. See if it starts something.
started something all right.
Good. Come on before anyone sees.
This is supposed to be it. Look, entry strictly forbidden.
Then we'll go in. And there's no window. Nothing.
It's a large bird.
Kaiser!
Lyra!
Oh, he's a witch's demon.
I've been waiting for you to come out into the open.
How did you know I was here?
I followed the cloud pine Dr. Lancelius gave you. What's happening? Why is there such chaos?
It's supposed to be a fire drill. Where are the Egyptians? Are John Farr and Far Decorum safe?
John Farr is wounded. The Egyptians are still a day's journey away. This place, there is something wrong here. Very wrong.
Yeah, there is. Billy, Roger, you better both go and keep watch.
Sorry for staring, like, but I've never seen a demon without a human before.
Me neither.
Now you have, so go.
And I'm not used to being stared at. Now, Lyra, tell me why you're trying to break in here.
Because I think it's where they cut children's demons off. But it's locked.
I can open it with a spell. Open lock when I knock.
Is that it?
It's not what you say, but the way that you say it.
Oh, thank you, Kaiser. Pan! No, don't look! Don't look!
Inside the room, in deep glass-sided cages, demons severed from their children howl and pine and shiver. They tremble into shapes that are jumbled. The head of an owl sits on a lizard's body. A dog with bird's legs has a monkey's head.
Kaiser, are you all right?
Where are the children of these demons?
We found one. Tony Macarius. Only he died. I'll smash the glass and let them out.
Wait. It must look as though someone forgot to lock the cages. Take a handful of snow and blow a little against each cage in turn.
As Lyra's breath carries the snow against the glass, Kaiser utters an invocation. The cages fall open.
Now I'll help these poor demons find their people. This is the most wicked thing I have ever seen.
But my footprints. If they see those, they'll know it's a child that's done this.
I'll cover them. Now run. Run!
What's Kaiser got? Is it the children's demons?
Yeah.
That's sad. Come on. They're starting to count heads. They'll be going in any minute now.
Tell everyone. They've got to put on their outdoor clothes and run out as soon as the fire alarm goes off again, right? I'm going to set it off, because there's a rescue party coming.
What's that buzzing sound?
It's a zeppelin.
The zeppelin docks, and Mrs. Coulter descends from the landing platform with the golden monkey demon in her arms. The children shrink from her as she walks among them. She doesn't seem to notice their fear.
Come on, Pan. I've dragged the locker to the corner so I can climb up. I need to use Roger's hiding place to stow stuff for later. The panel lifts off easy enough.
Careful, don't drop it.
Oh, no, got it. I'll put my boots and leggings in first. And if I wrap the real alethiometer inside the parka, I can shove that through as well. Oh, there, all ready for when we escape. I'll keep the pretend one in my pocket. Oh. If Mrs. Coulter sees us, we'll say we were kidnapped. Let's hide ourselves in the queue for hot drinks.
Did Mrs. Coulter get you too?
That monkey, he's worse. I tried to kick him.
Where do they go to talk?
They've got a conference room behind the front office.
When it starts out, I'm going to go to look around. Bella, anyone out in the corridor?
No, you're clear. Come on.
Shh. Okay, pull the locker back where it was.
How will you get down?
Jump.
Be careful.
I'll keep to these metal plates. They're supported by girders. The ceiling panels let light through. Pan, it's like being back in the retiring room.
If you hadn't got in, none of this would have happened.
Well, some of it would. But we wouldn't be here trying to rescue everyone. Now, which way takes us to the conference room?
To your left. Mind, Lyra. There's a row of heating pipes.
Okay. It feels solid underneath. Only, I think I'm going to sneeze.
Don't. People will hear you.
I'm trying not to.
I'll keep small and fly, so no one will hear me at all.
It must be above the conference room. I can hear voices. One's definitely Mrs. Coulter.
Tell me about the new separator.
Lord Asriel discovered that a manganese and titanium alloy has the property of insulating the body from the demon.
What's happening with Lord Asriel?
He's under suspended sentence of death. Now, your new instrument, Dr. Cooper, how does it work?
Well, we've developed a kind of guillotine, and the child is placed in a compartment, like a small mesh cabin, with the demon in a similar interconnecting space. The blade is brought down between them. It takes a matter of seconds. There have been some casualties.
Casualties?
Well, deaths.
I should still like to see it. But I'm tired now. I think I'll go to bed. Tomorrow, we shall find out who released the demons. Good night.
Good night.
Her attitude worries me. She likes watching the children being severed. It's almost ghoulish.
And what is Lord Asriel up to?
Trying to top her idea with something bigger.
But how's he got himself sentenced to death? I think they'll kill him sooner rather than later.
Someone's in the ceiling. Quick, pull that desk over.
Doctor! It's the new child!
Get off Pan! Get off him! We're supposed to touch another demon!
You kids aren't supposed to scuttle about in the ceiling like rats.
You don't suppose she freed the demons?
Not unaided.
She can't go back with the other children.
I can! I won't say anything! Let me go!
There's only one thing we can do.
Now?
No!
Yes. She won't remember who she is, what she heard.
Get off! Get off!
The two doctors carry a kicking, screaming, struggling Lyra along the corridors to the experimental heart of Bolvanga. The laboratory is brilliantly lit. Dr. Beck restrains Lyra whilst Dr. Cooper opens the doors to the mesh cabins. Then Pan and Lyra are forced inside the machine.
Why are you doing this? Help us! Don't touch Pan! Don't touch him!
The severing blade is raised as the mechanics engage and the process of separating body from soul begins.
What are you doing? Oh, Lyra, my darling!
The golden monkey disengages the machine and removes the restraints, gently lifting the bewildered pantalaimon from the cage. Lyra climbs out, avoiding Mrs. Coulter's attempts to help her.
My dear, dear child, why are you here? Sit up and drink this. Cry as much as you need to.
I'm not crying.
We searched all over for you, darling.
I was kidnapped.
I thought as much. We even offered a reward. I think the master of Jordan College gave you something. He told you not to tell me about it, didn't he?
It's meant for Lord Asriel.
Oh, no. He was sent into exile because he had something dangerous and wicked on his mind. The alethiometer is in that belt around your waist, isn't it?
Get off! It's not yours!
What a funny old tin. Another tin inside the first one. Soldered, too. Who did this, dear? Let me get my knife.
Mrs. Coulter takes out a silver clasp knife from her bag. She prizes the solder from the innermost tin, and the spy fly hurtles out. Lyra strikes the fire alarm with the edge of her fist, and she and Pan run out into the corridor.
You don't think it'll come after us?
I think it's too mad at Mrs. Coulter. Now, we need to get a real fire started.
Best place to do that's the kitchen.
We need some bags of flour.
Why?
Roger said if you hold one at a flame, it explodes.
How does he know? Here. Does it matter if it's self-raising?
I don't think so. Well, stand back.
Oh, he was right.
Well, yeah. Well, let's go and find Roger. Roger! Roger!
There. Come on, I can see him.
The goblins are going to cut you from your demons. Run, get out!
Run! There's a rescue party coming. Gotta get out! Run!
Lyra, the staff must have alerted the Tartar guards.
They're really going to shoot us! They're really going to shoot!
Make stables! Come on, quick! The only thing we can do is blind them with stables. They can't see! They can't aim! Now run!
Leggy, everyone!
There's other guards behind them! They're going to shoot us anyway! What's that?
Someone's shooting arrows at them!
Oh, it's witches! Look up! Seraphina Pekala!
A huge armored polar bear seems to materialize out of the snow itself. He runs towards the terrified children.
No! Don't turn back, children! Don't turn back! It's Yurik Berneson! Yurik! Yurik! He's on our side!
The kids don't know that!
They do now. He's got that gun.
Look what's happened to Mrs. Coulter's Zeppelin!
Gas must be escaping. No, it's not! It's Lee Scoresby's balloon rising behind it, filling up from the Zeppelin. Come on, children, come on! Keep moving or you'll freeze!
Demons, stop whimpering! Make yourselves as big as you can!
And keep your children warm.
Where are the Egyptians? The children are going to move too far away.
My hands, my feet, I can't feel them.
How far we got to go?
I'm not sure. I can't.
You dirty well walk. Get up, walk. Egyptians must be close.
There's lights ahead.
Oh, Pan. It's lantern beams. And dogs.
We're back at Bolvanger.
No, we can't be.
Lyra! Child!
Father Coram!
Lyra! She's rescued the children. Come now, children. You're safe. You're going home.
We'll go back to Jordan, Roger. Ah, I'm being pulled off the ground.
Me too. What's got hold of me? I can't see.
Oh, it's a witch.
Witches gently lift Roger and Lyra up to Lee Scoresby's balloon. They find it the most exhilarating feeling, being suddenly weightless, floating. Although the novelty can wear off, I assure you.
Thank you, ladies. Welcome aboard, Lyra. By all means, bring your friend.
Get in, Roger.
Oh, I'm trying.
Howdy, young man.
Hello.
Come on, Yorick, old feller.
A number of witches carry a surprised-looking Yorick Bjornsson into the balloon.
Lyra! Where have you gone?
I'm up here, Father Coram. We're off to rescue Lord Asriel.
Well, I thought the balloon would be useless. But here I am, gladly proved wrong.
Father Coram.
Seraphina Pacole, it's good to have seen you, even ever so fleetingly. Go well, Lyra, my dear. Farewell, Seraphina.
Goodbye, Father Coram. Goodbye, my love.
Esther, can you hear the swish of the cloud pine and smell the resin?
Wholesome as coffee, boiling on a campfire.
The witches are going to pull us north. Oh, my, this is novel. Like the pictures on old maps of the wind puffing out his cheeks. We've got the elegant version. Queen Seraphina and her ladies in rippling silk.
Lara, let's wrap Roger in some furs before he turns into an icicle.
Yurik, thank you.
You knew I would come.
Yeah, I knew.
The
Aurora. You can see the Bridge of Bifrost. The souls are supposed to cross it to go to the other world.
Seraphina flies up to the edge of the basket and sits on the rim so she can talk to Lyra.
Lyra Belacqua, have you got the symbol reader?
Yes, it's in my pocket. I keep checking it and finding stuff out.
A large snow goose demon flies up to join his witch.
Kaiser, hello.
Greetings, Lyra. I am happy you managed to free the children. The Egyptians have now laid waste to Bolvanger. It can never be rebuilt.
What happened to the demons we rescued?
Returned. Cared for. There is nothing else to be done for them.
So, Lyra, do you know why you're going to Lord Asriel?
Yes. I have to take him to Lithiomta. Why?
There are things I must tell you. But you're tired now. We'll talk when you wake. Let me touch your eyes. And Roger's too. Now sleep.
So, Seraphina, this little girl's important, huh?
Very.
Does that mean there's going to be much in the way of armed pursuit?
You're used to fighting, Mr. Scoresby.
Yep. But I thought this was a straightforward transportation contract, and I charged accordingly.
Insurance on these balloons goes up every time we're involved in an armed insurgency.
And I sometimes hanker after a little unalloyed, pleasurable flying, with nothing more hostile than an aggrieved bird.
This child will bring about the end of destiny.
Will she? Pity she ain't Texan.
I guess end in destiny don't boost her popularity in some quarters, huh? So you're saying I can expect trouble. How about the boy? Where does he fit in?
He was brought to the north by the fates. Lyra is taking something of immense value to her father.
That's how you read it, huh?
I might be wrong.
But the boy is part of the big picture.
We all are.
Roger's still asleep, then?
Yeah.
How far are we from Svalbard?
Not far now.
Where are we going to land?
We'll avoid the cliffs. Creatures live there who prey on anything that moves. Cliff ghasts. We'll set you down in the interior, away from Jofur Ragnarsson's palace.
Why do people have demons, Seraphina Pekka?
It's what makes us different from the animals.
But Yurik said his armor is like a demon.
Demons make us different, not better.
Why is he coming to Svalbard?
He hasn't told you who he is.
What do you mean?
He should be king. Only he committed a crime.
I thought their king was Jofur Ragnarsson.
Only because Yurik was exiled.
There was a fight over a she-bear.
He should have wounded, not killed his opponent.
True, Esther. But then we all do what we ought not to have done. To err is human.
To err is bear. And hair.
The ice-encrusted balloon flies on. Strong winds begin to buffet the gas bag and tilt the balloon.
Mrs. Scoresby, something is very wrong.
Can you see ahead?
No, but there's movement.
I'll let out some gas. We're way too high.
Oh, you better. We'll be astronauts, not aeronauts, if you don't, boy.
I ain't lost anybody yet, have I?
We're all here, Mrs. Scoresby. Yurik's keeping us from falling out.
You're safe.
Painted wagons, Hester. The balloon's kicking like a wild Mustang. Yeehaw! That's a gas valve, folks, and not a puncture. It works on a spring. Kind of like I wish I did when it gets this bumpy.
Before she can finish, winged leathered skinned gargoyles land on the balloon and attempt to drag it down. Slashing at it with their filthy talons, Yurik Bjornason cuffs them away. More take their place.
Cliff guards!
Sisters! The cliff guards are attacking!
A little rifle fire might clear the air!
The cliff ghasts make a terrible noise, and they stink and smirk. The balloon begins to plummet, and the basket tilts, hurling out Lyra and Pan. They fall a few feet and land on hard, frozen snow.
Ow! Oh.
Yurik! Roger!
The balloon, it's gone.
No, it can't have.
Where are we?
Welcome to Svalbard, Pan.
Cold, bruised, and frightened, Lyra and Pan make their way over weather-sheared rock and jags of ice.
Here are the sandbags. Mr. Scoresby must have slung them out to fly up again. Pan! There's Yurik! Yurik!
I think it is.
Pan's right. It isn't Yurik, but another armored bear. A foot soldier on patrol. He turns his lean, fierce face towards them.
Your name?
Lyra.
Where have you come from?
We fell from a balloon.
You are my prisoner.
Okay.
Move! Now we are near the palace. You must look up and marvel.
There is little daylight, but Lyra looks. She finds herself standing in front of a vast marble palace. It is taller than the highest tower of Jordan College.
The front is carved with representations of our warfare. It shows bears victorious and Skraelings surrendering, Tartars chained and slaving in the fire mines, Zeppelins flying from all parts of the world, bearing gifts and tributes to the King of Bears, Jofur Ragnarsson.
Does it? It's hard to make anything out because of the bird poo. Oh, it's everywhere, yuck!
But the bear doesn't notice the mess and the stink. And proudly leads Lyra with Pan hidden in her pocket over icy ground, filthy with the spatter of birds, into a courtyard. There's an increasing stink of rancid seal fat, bear and bird dung, blood, refuse of every sort. The way is lit by blubber lamps that don't allow Lyra to see what she's treading in. The bear stops outside a heavy door of iron. A guard bear pulls back a massive lock and then swings his head at Lyra, knocking her through the doorway.
Ooh. They're a bit heavy-headed, Pan. You all right?
Yeah, I'm a firefly. I'm trying to work up a good glow. And then...
The alethiometer's been banged about. I hope it still works.
Let me sit on your wrist so you can see.
That's a bit better. Right, I'll ask it where Yurik is. A few hours' way. carried there by the balloon after the crash.
And Roger.
With Yorick. He's safe then. Now, what will Yorick do? Break into the palace and rescue you. If I was a witch, Pan, you could go off and take the messages, and we would make a proper plan.
If you were a witch, we'd still be flying in the air on some cloud pine and not locked in the bear's dungeon.
Who's that talking? Who are you?
What?
Speak up.
Lyra Blackwa. What's your name?
Jotham Centilia. I'm a professor of cosmology at the University of Gloucester.
What have they locked you up for?
Malice and jealousy. I know too much about them.
So, have you seen you for Agnesen?
I've had tea with him on several occasions. I came here at his invitation. He wanted to set up a university. I was going to be a vice-chancellor.
What happened?
Lesser men spread lies about my qualifications.
Well, I expect Yorick Bernison will believe you.
No use if he did. He'll never come back.
Well, he's on his way now.
They'll kill him with fire hurlers before he gets near.
What about the other prisoners? Like Lord Azrael?
Shh, quiet. Yorick Bernison says he's not to be mentioned.
Why?
Mrs. Coulter came here and offered Yorick Bernison all kinds of rewards to keep Lord Azrael out of the way. Yorick was besotted with her. He's kept Lord Azrael isolated, but he's also let him have all the equipment he wants. He's trying to please both sides, and he's heading for catastrophe.
Oh, really?
Yes. And what Yorick Bernison wants most of all is a demon. A demon. How silly is that?
Get in my pocket, Pan.
Feet of the prisoners. Them as have teeth.
Mine have been confiscated. I don't mind. And I've stopped thinking about food. Now it has ceased to exist.
You must take me to Yorick Bernison. I've got news about Yorick Bernison.
Tell me. I'll pass it on.
I can't. The king has to know first.
Does he?
Yeah. He's the most important bear. So the most important information is told to him.
Oh, so many new rules. I can't keep up. You'd better come with me.
Lyra and Pantalaimon are guided into the throne room. There's the sudden blaze of light from an enormous pair of chandeliers. A dozen or more bears gaze at her. The room is also filled with skewers and turns. On a dais at the other end of the room is a mighty throne, hewn from granite and decorated with swags of gilt. Sitting on the throne is the biggest bear Lyra and Pantalaimon have ever seen. Yorick Bernison is taller and bulkier than Yorick, his face more mobile and expressive, with a kind of humanness. He wears a gold chain, and his claws, each a good 6 inches long, are covered in gold leaf.
Pan, the stink's worse than ever. On this horrible, pooey carpet.
Don't breathe too deeply, or you'll pass out.
Greetings, Your Majesty. I've got important information about Yorick Bernison and demons.
Demons? God, leave me. Who are you?
I'm Yorick Bernison's demon, Your Majesty.
What? Yorick Bernison's demon? How has a bear got a demon? And how are you so far from him?
I'm like a witch's demon. And he got me at Bolvanger. Mrs. Coulter didn't tell you everything they were doing there.
She swore she had.
Well, she didn't. She's that kind of person. Yorick Bernison offered himself for an experiment to see if they could make a demon for him. And they made me. My name's Lyra. People's demons are animal form, so a bear's demon is human.
Of course I know that. And where is he now?
Here.
What do you mean? Here.
Svalbard.
Oh, you'll tear him to pieces.
Oh, no, you mustn't. Once they saw how powerful a bear was with a demon, they were scared and stopped the experiment. That means Yorick Bernison is the only bear who will ever have a demon. He wants to lead all the bears against you, and that's why he's coming to Svalbard.
I will kill him.
But if you kill him with fire hurlers, I'll die as well.
Well, demon... Do you have an alternative suggestion?
Yeah. Defeat Yorick in single combat.
I can't fight with him. He's an outcast.
Well, you'll have to if you want me as your demon.
Prove you're a demon.
All right. Ask me something only you know.
What was the first creature I killed?
That's easy. When I'm your demon, you'll be able to see how I do it. But until then, it's private.
There is an anteroom behind this one. Come out when you have the answer.
Where is Yorick now? An hour away.
That's no use. We haven't got a watch.
What was the first creature Yorick Ragnarsson killed? Yorick's own father? Alone, on his first hunting expedition, he came across another bear. They argued, and Yorick killed him. He only found out afterwards, and he's never told anyone. How do I tell him that? He'll kill me.
Flatter him. Tell him he smells nice.
Pan.
Well?
I beg your pardon, Your Majesty. I didn't know you were so strong.
Answer my question.
The first creature you killed was your own father. And it was before you were fully grown. You didn't know it was him, but you were the stronger.
Yes. You are a real demon. A bear's demon. You will be mine.
Yorick Bernison is only an hour away. Tell your guards not to attack him.
What should I say to my subjects?
Say that you've called Yorick Bernison here to fight him, and that whoever wins will rule over the bears forever.
Guards! Prepare the combat ground. Yorick Bjørnason is on his way, and we shall face each other in combat for the kingship in perpetuity. Now, armorers, prepare me. Sharpen my claws and burnish my armor. Fetch me a fresh kill that I can test my claws on.
A walrus carcass is fetched. Two blows and its skull is cracked like an egg. Lyra watches with increasing horror.
Oh, Pan, what have I done? It feels like I've sentenced Yorick to death.
There is a roar from the watchtower as Yorick Bjørnason enters the palace grounds.
He's here!
Go now, demon. Tell him I want to fight.
Yorick! Yorick, here!
Lyra!
Yorick, I've done a terrible thing. I've tricked Yorick Ragnarsson to thinking that I was your demon and that I was going to desert you. But he had to fight to win me. Otherwise, Yorick dear, they were going to kill you before you got close.
You tricked Yorick Ragnarsson?
Well, I made him agree that he'd fight you, and the winner would be King of the Bears.
You are Lyra's silver tongue. To fight him is all that I want. Come, my little demon.
Fight well, Yorick dear. You're the real king.
Bears! The terms of this combat are these. If Yorick Ragnarsson kills me, then he will be king forever. If I kill Yorick Ragnarsson, I shall be your king. My first order to you all will be to tear down that palace. Iron is metal of bears. Gold is not. Yorick Ragnarsson has polluted Svalbard. Yorick Ragnarsson, I challenge you. Yes, Yorick Bjørnason has come back at my invitation. It's for me to make the terms of combat. If I kill Yorick Bjørnason, his flesh shall be torn apart and scattered to the cliff ghasts, and his head shall be displayed above my palace. His memory shall be obliterated. He will never have existed.
Yovher looks glossy and immense, and splendidly armored. Yorick is smaller, poorly equipped, with his armor rusted and dented. But Yorick's armor is his soul. Yovher, discontent in his, is restless for another form of soul. Yorick reads this from the Bear King's way of moving. The bears begin to prowl, edging forward, swinging their heads. Then they stop and face each other. And with a roar and blur of snow, they start to run, gathering speed like two great masses of rock shaken loose by an earthquake. The crash as they meet echoes back from the palace wall. The first to rise is Yorick.
Yorick's damaged King Yorick's armor. He's dented it. The Bear King can't lift his head, and there's a gap near his neck.
Yorick makes for this gap, breaking the translucent fur, hooking his claws beneath the edge of Yorick's helmet. Yorick fixes his teeth near Yorick's throat. Drops of blood fly through the air. Then Yorick's rare claws dig into the links of Yorick's chainmail sark and rip downwards.
That gold arm is useless. Yorick's battered old stuff is much better, much stronger. Oh, there's a lot of blood.
The two bears stand apart. Yovher now hindered by the chainmail which trails around his rear legs. But Yorick is bleeding freely from a deep wound at his neck. And then the two bears are at each other again, throwing up fountains of snow.
He's hurt his leg. No! No, no, no!
Lyra trembles. Yorick is limping every time he puts his left forepaw to the ground. It hardly bears his weight, and the blows from his left hand are growing feeble.
Whimpering chomper!
Oh, Pan! Yorick's gonna die! But he must see that I don't turn away. I'm not fearful. Oh, my dear one!
But Yorick is moving backwards to find clear, dry footing from which to leap, and the useless left arm is really fresh and strong. You cannot trick a bear, but Yovher does not want to be a bear. He yearns to be human. Yorick is tricking him. Suddenly, as Yovher taunts, Yorick rises up against Yovher, tearing his lower jaw clean off so that it flies into the snow yards away. Yofa's red tongue lolls down, dripping over his open throat. The Bear King is voiceless, biteless, helpless, and bleeding to death. Yorick bites into Yovher's throat, and Yovher Rekneson's life comes away in his teeth. There is acclamation. Pandemonium. A crush of bears surging forward to pay homage.
Bears! Who is your king? Now demolish the palace!
Yorick, there's people inside the dungeons. They'll be killed.
Stop, bears! Release any human prisoners you find there. Then raise it to the ground!
Yorick, I wish there were some bandages or something. There's an awful cut on your belly.
The bear lays a mouthful of some thickly frosted green moss at Yorick's feet.
This is blood moss. Press it in the wounds for me, Lyra.
Some of the blood starts to freeze on the tips of her fingers. And when the bleeding stops, she looks across the courtyard. Walking towards her through the red snow is Roger, with his demon, Salcilia.
Lyra!
Roger!
We crashed into a mountain. Yorick Bernison came straight back to look for you. He carried me to the edge of the palace and told me to wait. I'm famished. I suppose I'm going to have to eat seal. Never thought I'd miss Borvanger in any way, but I've been dreaming of cheese on toast.
And no chance of that, Roger. Come on! They're going to light a fire.
Lyra Silvertongue, come and tell me what Mrs. Coulter will do.
There's not enough light to read the alethiometer by.
Fetch light.
What happened to Mr. Scoresby and the witches?
The witches were attacked by another witch clan. As for Lee Scoresby, the balloon soared up again after the boy and I fell out, taking him with it. Your symbol reader will tell you what his fate is. Here is your light.
A sledge with a cauldron of smoldering charcoal is brought. A bear thrusts a resinous branch into it, and it catches at once.
Lee Scoresby's still in his balloon. He's not hurt.
What of Mrs. Coulter?
It says... she's heard about us flying this way. And she's got a transport zeppelin armed with machine guns. And they're on their way here. She'll soon know about you for Atkinson, because witches will tell her. And they'll learn it from Cliffglass. She's going to kill Lord Asriel. It's coming clear now. She knows what he's going to do. It must be about the city in the sky. She's trying to get to it before he does. Wait, now it's telling me something else. Right. She wants something I've got, because Lord Asriel wants it too. It must be the Silithiometer. I must take it to Lord Asriel.
How near is Mrs. Coulter?
A few hours.
I will take you to Lord Asriel. Children, climb onto the bears and they will carry you.
Do you think your dad will give us something decent to eat?
We've come this far to give him the Elithiometer. He should throw us a party.
Cheese on toast will do for me.
Again they journey northward. The way is difficult and bitterly cold. The children's hands and feet are so numb they can hardly manage to hold on to the bears. And then, ahead of them is a house with massive windows. Light spills from them onto the snow. Visible through the topmost window is a figure pacing backwards and forwards, his hair like a lion's mane. The children stumble through the snow, supporting each other as the wind cuts the exposed skin of their faces. They reach the door.
Not Lyra. Not little Lyra. Come in.
Thorold!
Lord Asriel, look who's here.
What are you doing here?
Come on, Lyra. We should have gone straight back to Jordan College.
Wait, who's this with you?
It's Roger Parslow. He's my friend. Not that you're really interested. Goodbye.
But how did you get here?
Yuri Bernison and his guard brought us. He's the new king of the bears.
Is that so? Thorold, run a bath for these children and prepare some food. Their clothes are filthy. They smell of bear.
Follow me, Miss Lyra. Roger.
Excuse me, sir, but if there's a choice, can I have cheese and toast, please?
Of course you can. But first, let's run you a bath and warm you up.
Roger, you go first. I'll sit outside and talk.
I'm scared of your uncle. I mean your father.
Yeah, me too.
When we come in, he never saw me, and he was horrified.
We never expected to see me. He thought I was back in Jordan College. He was really shocked, wasn't he?
I don't know why, but I'm more scared of him than I was of Mrs. Coulter. My guess is he's up to something.
You mean more than trying to get to the city in the sky?
He's sort of plotting.
Do you want me to ask the symbol reader about it?
I'd rather not know. That was smashing. Best cheese and toast I've ever tasted. Thank you.
Now you've eaten, the boy is to go to bed. His lordship asks if you'll join him in the library, Miss Lyra.
All right. Thorold's gone all formal on us. Something's definitely up. I'll try and find out what it is.
Come on, Miss Lyra. Lord Asriel's inclined to get a bit impatient.
Your friend, Yorick Bjørnason, is resting outside. He prefers the cold. He seems to have appointed himself your guardian.
John Farr told him to look after me.
How does John Farr come into this?
I'll tell you if you tell me something. You're my father, aren't you? And Mrs. Coulter, she's my mother.
Yes.
You should have told me before.
I don't see what difference it would have made, except you'd have felt it was your right to plague me when I visited.
And when you saw me just now, it was like I was some horrible thing you never wanted to see again, and not your own flesh and blood. I bet Yorick Bjørnason loves me more than you do. Besides, I stopped you from drinking that poison wine. You'd be dead now if it weren't for me.
I could say the same for you.
What do you mean?
I saved your life as a baby.
And it would have been more convenient for you if I died.
If you're going to be sentimental, I shan't waste my time talking to you, all right?
Fine. Take your stupid Elithiometer then. I'm going back with Yorick. Mrs. Coulter's on her way to Svalbard in a zeppelin with lots of soldiers, and they're going to kill us all.
They'll never reach us.
Yes, they bloody will.
Sit down. Come on. Sit down where I can see you.
Have you got another Elithiometer then?
I don't need one.
I've come all this way to give it to you. You could have at least pretended.
You'd have seen through any lie. You're a natural liar yourself, so I couldn't have tricked you. Your name's appropriate. Lyra the Liar.
What's dust?
Dust makes the Elithiometer work.
So I was told. But what is it?
The Magisterium has been preaching about dust for centuries, only they don't call it by that name.
What do they call it?
Do you know what original sin is?
Yeah, of course I do.
No, you don't. Pass me that Bible. You remember the story of Adam and Eve?
God threw them out of the garden for eating an apple.
And when the woman took up the fruit thereof and did eat, and gave also unto her husband with her, their eyes were opened, and they looked upon the one true form of their demons and spoke with them. But until that moment, they were at one with all the creatures of the earth and of the air and of the water. And they knew good and evil, and were ashamed. And they sewed fig leaves together to cover their nakedness. Sin came into the world at that moment their demons were fixed, because they suddenly knew right from wrong, good from evil. This was regarded by the Magisterium as loss of innocence. This is what they mean by original sin.
But there wasn't really an Adam and Eve.
Think of Adam and Eve as an imaginary number, like the square root of minus one. You can never see any concrete proof that it exists. But if you include it in your equations, you can calculate all manner of things that couldn't be imagined without it. And when dust was discovered, there was physical proof that something happened. The Bible gave us the name dust as well. Of dust thou art, and unto dust thou shalt return.
And what about the gobblers?
Your mother's always been ambitious for power. At first she tried to get it through marriage, but that didn't work. So she turned to the church and set up her own order, specializing in dust. The Magisterium backed her with money and resources.
But whose idea was it to do the cutting in the first place?
Hers. She guessed that if the demon was separated from the body, we might never be subject to original sin. There was something else that happened during the process. The energy that links body and demon is immensely powerful. When the cut is made, all that energy escapes in a fraction of a second.
Did you do any cutting?
No.
Never?
Never. I didn't need to. Now, I want to go to the source of dust itself, to the universe we can see through the aurora. No one thought it would be possible to travel from one universe to another. But if light can cross the boundary, so can we. We can build a bridge. It needs a phenomenal burst of energy, but I can do it. And when I do, death is going to die.
Miss, get up quickly.
Thorold, what's happening?
Lord Asriel's got the boy, miss.
He's taken Roger.
I never knew till now. But he needed a child to finish his experiment.
Oh, Roger, what have I done?
How could you have known, miss? I've lived with him 20 years and I didn't.
Yorick! Where's Yorick? Is he still outside?
I haven't looked.
Well, help me dress. I've got to go.
We couldn't have known he'd do this, Lyra. You can't blame yourself.
I should have asked the alethiometer.
Roger said not to.
Yeah, but I still should have checked. It didn't mean I had to tell him. Yorick Burson, I need you. Lord Asriel's taken Roger. Oh, Yorick, please go quick. We've got to rescue him.
Come then. Climb on my back.
Ah, the moon is incredibly bright.
There are the tracks of Lord Asriel's sledge, running towards that range of hills.
I think I can see movement ahead. Pan, can you become an owl and look?
Yes. It's Lord Asriel and Roger. They're going really fast.
Yorick, what is it? Oh, the aurora.
Not that. Climb down. The Zeppelin's coming, and with it another enemy. Witches. These are not Serafina Pecola's clan. Bears, into formation. Lyra, get behind that rock. The witches must swoop low to fire accurately. Then we will rake them from the air.
Some are turning back. And the Zeppelin's here.
Unload the fire hurler. Aim and fire that well. Can't pierce armor with little bullets!
The bears discharge another deadly burst from the fire hurler. It finds purchase on the silk envelope of the Zeppelin's gas bag. The hydrogen inside it ignites. The Zeppelin crashes, flaming into the ice.
The witches have helped Mrs. Coulter drag the machine gun clear. They will hold out for a long time. Lyra, we must go on.
Yurik, will you find East Scoresby?
Yes.
And if you see Seraphina Pecola?
I will tell her what you did.
Thank you, Yurik.
The tracks go on, but I cannot. You must walk over the ice bridge alone. My weight would break it.
If I come back, I'll thank you properly, King Yurik Bernison.
Goodbye, Lyra Silvertongue.
Goodbye.
Lyra must cross a thin arc of ice to reach Roger and Lord Asriel. There's a crack running across the width of it. She has to cross this fragile bridge or fail Roger.
Lyra, step gently. Come on, I'll fly.
Oh, I think... Pan!
Yes, run. Lyra, run. Come on, jump.
The snow bridge snaps away from the cliff and falls into the chasm.
I wish it was someone else doing this, not me. I don't know what to do. I'm really scared. I'm really, really scared.
Come on, we have to get Roger. We can still rescue him. Don't give up.
They climb into the moonlit cold, with the aurora dancing around their heads. Tears have frozen on Lyra's face. Some hang like crystals from her long, tawny eyelashes.
So many mountains to the east and west. South is the way we came. I can't see Yurik or the other bears. I'm not even sure I can see the wreck of the Zeppelin.
I'll fly up a little way and find Lord Asriel and Roger. Yes, yes, they're here. Just beyond the peak, Lord Asriel's laid out his wires and batteries.
What does he want Roger for?
Whatever it is, he's got hold of his arm. He's not letting him go.
The aurora's flickering and dimming, like an aberrant bulb just before it dies. It's gone out altogether. Pan, I think I can feel something. Is it dust? It's like the air's full of thoughts.
Lyra! Lyra!
Help us, please!
I'm here, Roger! Lyra! I'm coming, Salsivia!
Lyra!
Pan changes into a snow leopard, almost as large as Lord Asriel's demon, Stell Maria.
Oh, Pan! Stell Maria's got Roger's demon!
Let us go!
Lord Asriel knocks Roger to the ground. He then connects two wires leading from the sledge. The aurora blazes into life again, like a current between terminals.
Lord Asriel's controlling the aurora.
I am master of the aurora, but the best is still to come. The spectacle to end all spectacles is about to open the sky.
No! No! No, please!
Grab my hand! Now run, Roger! Pan! Snatch Salsilia! Get her clear!
Stop! Lord Asriel's demon's got Salsilia again!
Chuck snowballs at her! Come on! The snow's giving way under us! We're gonna fall! Roger! Grab Salsilia!
And the entire shelf of snow is sliding away beneath Lyra and Roger and Pan. Roger cries and twists because the snow leopard has his demon.
Lyra
knows the heart-convulsing pain that separation causes, and she tries to stop them sliding, but she can't. An entire shelf of snow slithers towards the sea 1,000 feet below. Roger is severed from his demon, and his heart stops. And high above them, the greatest wonder. There's a rending, grinding, and tearing which reaches from one end of the universe to the other. And there's dry land in the sky. The aurora sways above them, its continual surging flicker picking out buildings and a great blue lake and rows of swaying palm trees in the world above. They are so close it seems possible to step from this world to that. And suddenly, Mrs. Coulter appears on the ridge next to Lord Asriel. The vault of heaven, star-studded and profound, seems to shatter. A warm wind rises, melting the snow. The fall of the snow shelf is halted. An unseen ledge breaks its fall.
No!
Lyra, eyes wide, watches her parents embrace. Roger's body lies dead in her arms. Pan has copied Salcilia's last form, an Arctic fox, and he shivers and whimpers. Above them, Ozymandias reaches out a tentative paw towards Stella Maria. The leopard lowers her head with a graceful, sensual acknowledgement, and they touch. Her own parents together.
No! My parents should be shoving each other off the mountain, not kissing. I bloody well want to be orphan. Look, Pan, they're kissing and stuff.
Mrs. Coulter's held tightly in Lord Asriel's arms. Light plays around them like sparks. Lyra can only imagine what must have happened. Mrs. Coulter, with some kind of terrible determination, had managed to follow her here.
I've made it possible for anyone to cross if they wish.
They'll excommunicate those who try.
This will mean the end of the Magisterium, Marissa. The end of all centuries of darkness. Look at the sun of another world. Feel the warmth of it on your skin.
Lord Asriel pushes back Mrs. Coulter's hood and turns her head to the sky, running his hands through her hair. Lyra watches breathlessly, unable to move a muscle.
Come with me. Away and out of this world.
I daren't.
Your child would dare anything.
She's more yours than mine, Asriel. And where is she now? I followed her footsteps up.
You want her still? Twice you've tried to hold her. Twice she's got away.
Lyra looks at their demons and sees a strange sight. The snow leopard tenses, crouching with her claws just pressing into the golden monkey's flesh. Then Mrs. Coulter pulls back fiercely from the kiss.
No, Asriel. My place is in this world.
Come and work with me.
We couldn't work together.
You and I could take the universe to pieces and put it back together again. We could find the source of dust and stifle it forever.
They kiss again. The snow leopard rolls over on her back, and the monkey rakes his claws into the soft fur of her neck, and she growls a deep rumble of pleasure.
If I stay here, you'll try to destroy me.
Come with me. Work with me, and I'll care whether you live or die. Stay here, and you'll lose my interests forever. Now, choose.
Mrs. Coulter hesitates. Her eyes closed. She seems to sway as if she were fainting.
No. No.
Their demons are apart again. Lord Asriel reaches down and curls his strong fingers into the snow leopard's fur and walks away without another word. The golden monkey leaps into Mrs. Coulter's arms, making little sounds of distress, reaching out to the snow leopard as she paces away. And Mrs. Coulter's face is covered in real hot tears. Shaken with sobs, she moves back down the mountain. Lyra watches coldly till she disappears from view. Then she looks up and sees a city hanging above them, shining and new-made. The sun of another world continues to melt the ice. She's still holding Roger's body. Pantalaimon is trying to say something, but her mind is ablaze, and she can't hear him till he presses his claws into the back of her hand.
Lord Asriel tricked me.
Lyra.
What? What?
Lord Asriel's going to find the source of dust and destroy it, isn't he?
Yeah, that's what he said.
And the oblation ball. And the Magisterium, and Polfanger, and Mrs. Coulter. They want to destroy dust as well, don't they?
Yeah, or stop it affecting people. Why?
If they think dust is bad, then it must be good.
Yeah, you're right. They're all afraid of it. And we just presumed dust was bad too. Because they were grown-ups and said so.
We could get to it before he does, and...
Yeah, we'll go up there and search for dust. And when we found it, we'll know what to do. We'll get to it before Lord Asriel does.
We could do it too. We've come all this way.
Just because we're children, that doesn't matter.
We'd be alone. Yorick Bjornason can't follow us and help. Nor Father Corum, Lord Far, or Seraphina Pekala, or Mr. Scoresby. No one.
Roger's body lies still in her arms. She lets him down gently, stands up and turns away.
We'll do it.
Behind them lies pain and death. Ahead of them lies doubt and anger and fathomless mysteries. But they aren't alone. They have each other. So Lyra and her demon Pantalaimon turn away from the world they were born in and look towards the sun.
Come on, Pan. When we find us, we'll know what to do. Let's walk into the sky.
In Northern Lights by Philip Pullman, dramatised by Lavinia Murray, Lyra was played by Lulu Popplewell, Balthamos by Ray Fearon, Lord Asriel by Terence Stamp, and Mrs. Coulter by Emma Fielding. Farda Coram was played by Kenneth Cranham, the Master by Bill Patterson, Lee Scoresby by Peter Marinka, Hester by Carla Simpson, and Serafina Pekala by Tracy Ann Oberman. Yorick Bjørnason was played by Steve Hodson, Jofa Ragnarsson by Gerard McDermott, Pantaliman by Richard Firth, and Ozymandias by David Holt. Lord Farr was played by Sean Dooley, Mar Costa by Anne Beach, Joey Costa by Ben Crowe, the Housekeeper by Joanna Munro, Dr. Cooper by Martin Hyder, and Santalia by Ewan Meredith. Roger was played by Lee Conwell, Annie by Sumaya Keynes, and Bella by Amy Dunn. Stel Maria was played by Laura Doddington, Salcilia by Emma Williams, Billy by Greg Prentice, Tony by Oliver Cookson, and Kaiser by Simon Donaldson. Technical presentation was by Peter Ingrose, Colin Guthrie, and Richard Beedsmore. The music was composed and realised by Billy Cowie. Northern Lights was directed by David Hunter.